With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor All Stars. I'm your host Shannon Gus, formerly Gates, here to talk about Week 1 of All Stars. I think everyone would agree it was pretty damn epic. That final tribal council was one for the ages. And to talk about it, I have a great guest. So please welcome our collective John's Butt back for another season, the great Rob Cestanino. Rob, thank you so much for coming on to chat Week 1.
Oh, Shannon, thank you so much for having me. I'm so pumped up after the first week of Australian Survivor All Stars.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everyone's pumped up. Twitter kind of exploded. David Jennett, if you have him on any Survivor season, any Survivor episode, I think you've got a great product. I think that is the ingredient you need.
Yes, love David so much. So happy to be able to talk about it. I was so nervous during that tribal council, and I really thought, like, oh my God, no, he's gonna get screwed over. That they're gonna put their votes on him. And that I was so worried, and I was so happy when the idol got played on him. So I was very emotional after this episode.
Yeah, not only did they not put their votes on him, both sides put their votes on who he wanted them to put the votes on.
I know.
He was safe. And he was saved with someone else's idol, which he had intended to happen. Like, I mean, really just had the entire tribal council down pat, didn't he?
Everything was turning up David, and I was so happy, and I loved it. And how are we going to do this for, 46 more days?
46 more days in the game, and also probably, like, in life, because, you know, once we, like, blow past the season, I think the days are pretty much comparable. It's going to be, like, hard and fast with this stuff, you know, like, 3 episodes, it's a lot, they're very long episodes, but, you know, when it's good content, you can't really complain.
Yes. And I forgot to say that I'm as pumped as Jonathan's guns to be here.
Yeah. I'm glad that you had that one saved up. I don't know. Should we talk about the move? Should we dive right into it because everyone wants to talk about it? But I also do want to talk about, like, the cast at large. And, like, we weren't able to do that in the preview. So I want to take a bit of a macro view of that. You let me know, Rob. I'm giving you the power of being Rob as a podcast. What do you want to chat about?
It's so exciting that we're here. I mean, what a month for Survivor. That, I mean, that for me, getting ready to podcast about Survivor Winners at War, that this was got me so excited this week. What a time we live in, Shannon Gus.
and our winners did go to war and they lost. Pretty comfortably. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have any winners left on the season. I know some people were pretty upset about that, but also fairly inevitable. Rob, like, looking at the cast, having seen quite a lot of Australian Survivor, if I think all of it, I don't really remember what you've seen, but what is your view of the cast, looking at it, like, with a bird's eye view?
So the cast is really, really fun. You know, I do think it's kind of top heavy, that anybody that has, you know, any sort of familiarity with me as a Australian Survivor fan knows that I'm a filthy casual when it comes to the Australian Survivor. But we've got a ton of great gets, that both of these tribes are really fun to watch. You know, there's a few people that are sort of like the red shirts that we have, and maybe I don't know how they're going to do in the season, but I feel like a lot of the Australian Survivor seasons, it's like, here are your favorites that we care about, we're going to follow them very closely, and we'll be very sad if they get voted out. And then, but they're also going to be, you know, playing idols and knocking out people that we don't care about. I feel like that's also a thing, or we don't care about as much. That happens a lot in Australian Survivor. So I think you need to have some of those people there.
Yeah, we talked about this last time, and like, it's just not as episodic as US Survivor. You don't get one episode and then have a week to chat about it. Like, it's content coming to you, you know, all the time. So it's much more just like storylines that you can follow. It's much more a TV product. Like, I've always thought that the fact that they don't do like a full cast announcement and stuff, it's much more like an entertainment product, I think, than like the US Survivor, which is more of a game or a sport. And that's the way that you can kind of like look at the confessionals and stuff. I think people get caught up trying to analyze US Survivor and Australian Survivor in the edit the way they're so used to with the US.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do sort of like the winner's edit is there on the seasons. You know, I think that even last season when we talked at the merge, I was like, boy, yeah, Pia is really getting a lot of airtime.
Jericho was quite like, that could be a winner's edit, but like Shane and Christy, probably not. So like, I don't think it's that obvious. I think people get caught up.
They did the best they could, maybe.
Like, I think after the first episode, everyone's like, oh, this person doesn't have a confessional, they're ruled out. And like, I think 11 people didn't have a confessional, so that would be unfortunate. I don't see it like that. Like, I see it as this whole week. It was like 50 hours that we got these three episodes. Like, I wouldn't rule out Shan just because she didn't have a lot to do in episodes 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. But in episode 3, she finally gets like her package about how she's a barrister and like her story and stuff. Like, for me, that's enough because it's not so episodic and it's much more just like the long-term storylines.
Yeah. You know, maybe that the way they promote the season is a little bit more like a movie poster where it's like, you know, here are a lot of the stars that are going to be in this movie. We're not telling you every single person in the movie. You can go on IMDb and find that out if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we didn't get a chance to talk about the cast. I do want to kind of talk about it at large and the tribe makeups. But the first thing I want to say, because I haven't been able to say it for like the months that I've had this rant inside me, and it's about Zach. And I just want to lead with it to get it out of the way, because a lot of people are like, what do you think about them casting Zach? And it is very disappointing, I think. And like, so well crystallized by his magazine being about how he was sexist. Like, that's all he can be so memorable for, that they literally could not have put another thing in his magazine. It's literally like bringing back Will Sims 2 and having his magazine be him abusing Shireen.
Okay,
like,
well, let's not. We don't need to talk about that.
Do you think he's listening to this? Anyway.
I think huge Australian Survivor fan. Yeah. But no, it's such a good point. And also, it's not like where, you know, that he can sort of say, like, look, that was me 2 years ago. Okay. I've grown up a lot since then.
Yeah. A year and a half, I think, actually. You
went right back to that. He was saying, like, yeah, well, I call it like I see it.
That was such an uncomfortable scene. And it's like, I don't know what the producers want out of it, because I know that he was very last minute. If you're wondering why he's a snake in that marooning, probably because of like who he replaced, because it really doesn't make sense to have him with the snakes kind of skulking over there. But
Are you allowed to say who he replaced? Because I don't know.
From what I hear, Benji.
Yes. What happened? I was going through the cast list myself, just as I was like, hey, what happened to Benji? Why isn't Benji here? I tweeted out, I was cracking myself up because I said that Benji had the Patrick Mahomes haircut before Patrick Mahomes had. And I tweeted out a picture. Right. Yes, I know. But why isn't he here? Did he not want to play? Did he have a falling out?
From what I hear, it was like he had like pretty intense demands. I don't know. These are all rumors, but.
Oh, Benji. Get a grip, Benji. Get a grip.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he's a huge loss to the cast. I do think like if you have him over a Zach and a couple of, like a Sarah over maybe like a Jackie, like the cast just looks a lot better.
Sure.
But so they have Zach, he's a snake now. And what do they expect to happen? Either he redeems himself, which he absolutely does not deserve to have the platform to do, or he continues to suck, which no one wants to watch, or he's just super boring because he's not even interesting beyond being sexist. They literally brought someone back for being a misogynist. I just want to get that out of my system.
Well, I don't know if we should say that he doesn't deserve to redeem himself. If he can redeem himself, he should redeem himself.
I don't think so. Like, why does he get a platform to do that? Why does he get a second chance to do that? He was terrible. He wasn't even interesting. Like, at least, like, Russell Hans is, like, a misogynist, but also is an interesting character, and they didn't bring him back for that reason. That's my issue. And if he's going to redeem himself, like, do it on social media, but, like, he should not get an extra season to do it for no reason.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know who he was, so it came back. I think that the podcast I did during Australian Survivor season 3 with Nick, I think was right before the merge in that season. So now that I've seen him back on the show, like I remember him, but yeah, he is like a who's that? What guy?
Him? This guy. That's it. That's all you got. Did you like the marooning though? Like, that was a bit of a different vibe. I had my issues with it, but I enjoyed it overall.
Yeah, it was kind of wacky that I was talking about. I just did the Angie Kontz character type podcast, and I kind of feel like that. Boy, Australian Survivor really leaning into this. Like, hey, let's bring back this is this character. We're going to bring back three of these that are this character. We're going to bring back four of these people that are this character. Okay, so. It was fine. I mean, I do think it's interesting how much the show really, you know, I can't watch it and not make the comparisons between the US version and the Australian version. But it does seem like between the magazine and I know they've done stuff like this what did they do last season? Like, where they had like the plates that were sort of like they bring stuff in and they're sort of like a little like Big Brother-y, I guess, of like, yeah, we don't care if we're going to blow up your game a little bit. Like, we might be shining a spotlight on things that you didn't necessarily want us to talk about, but we don't care. We're going to do what we want to do.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to chat about the magazines later. Some of it was really interesting. Like, I loved with Harry's. It was like, Harry takes down the
Godwin. Cover.
Yeah, and they were like, tell us about it, because they hadn't even seen it. Like, it hadn't even aired in Australia yet. So, that wasn't Survivor history. Right. That was actually the future. So, that's cool.
But could you imagine, Shannon, that when, you know, Russell Hance comes back for Survivor Heroes versus Villains, and yeah, he's on the Villains tribe, but there's no magazine about like Russell Hance burns Jason's socks and you know, does all these things, you know, finds idols without clues. Read the magazine.
Quote Dumbass Girls, for sure.
Yeah, Dumbass Girl Alliance. So I thought that was kind of wild, and they really did throw Dirty Harry under the bus.
Yeah, I mean, they literally have them with the marooning as, like, snakes and stuff. So if you want to get away from your reputation, you're now, like, in this box. Sean was someone who they put as a hero, but she's been really strategic. She's also won the most individual immunities in the show's history, so she could have kind of gone anywhere. But they put you in this box. The category I had an issue with was the score to settle or something to prove category, which was literally just all the women. That was a weird one. Why does Shawnee and Michelle have something to prove? Like, they came fourth. Put them in, like, a social threats category. That was a little weird. I did like the concept overall.
Can we talk about our friend Nick, who is one of the, and of course, like, he was the snake in his season, but I think, as he pointed out, like, yeah, he's kind of like an earthworm compared to some of the snakes that would come later on in the show. And I feel like that maybe if the show isn't like really like shining a light and highlighting that's maybe better for Nick than to have him lumped in with the, you know, all time snakiest snakes of the game.
But he does have to be in that category. Like, he pretty much defined Australian Survivor snake at the time, as unfair as it might have been. And at least he's there next to Harry and AK, so he does look, I think, like a really small snake by comparison. So yeah, I mean, do I think Nick wanted to come out and be in a snake category that's literally skulking through a swamp? For many reasons, probably not. That swamp looked pretty dirty.
Yeah,
so that's one of them.
Yeah, would you rather be the snakiest hero or the least snakiest snake?
The snakiest hero. Like, for Sean, I think it is really good. Like, if they can come out of that and be like, oh yeah, Sean kind of was heroic and kind of forget the other things. Then her magazine was like, she pooped out an idol, which was like her worst moment. So they're like, oh, she's stupid and she's a hero. Like, they completely underestimated her. That's a good thing from the show to do for her.
Shannon, do you think that we'll see the other tribes magazine at some point?
Yeah, well, like the plate that we waited for ages, we waited for Harry and Oscar's plate. I don't really think so. They don't tend to kind of bring it back, but I would love it. What would they do for David at this point? I'd love it for David if they just brought back this tribal council.
Yeah,
I maybe know they do like Stephen, but wow.
Yeah, I mean, they would, you know, everybody has to have a nickname in Australian Survivor. So it would be like Golden God chows down and would be him like face down in the popcorn.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I think that it would be something like that.
Yeah, I do kind of want to think about it now, because for some of them, it's like, what would you say? Like for Mohope, you'd either have to say that she took out Russell or she quit. So hopefully it would be a bit of a Russell thing. And then you'd get like Flicks being that she took out Brooke. So that probably would have been really interesting. It's a fun thing that they do it, because it's kind of uncomfortable. Like Lee's was about how he got trashed at Final Tribal Council, and Nick's face being the trasher was like, bury me right now. Bury me in my swamp as a snake that I am.
Yeah. I also thought they talked about, Christy, boy, she really sold a bill of goods at that Final Tribal Council.
Yeah. Lee was just like looking at Nick. They bring it up, and that's interesting with the tribes as well, because a lot of people have pointed out they've put all those uncomfortable connections on the same tribe, which I don't think the US would have really done as much. Like they probably would have separated the closer antagonistic connections, and then hopefully like an early swap they would have come together. But they've got Lockie and AK on the same tribe, Lee and Nick, Brooke and Flick, Lydia and Shane. So they obviously like really want to have those relationships tested very early.
Yeah. You know, I feel like that we used to always talk about a rival season, you know, in the like time following Blood versus Water, like, oh, they should do a rival season, and like, oh, no, it can't be done. I still think it's a good idea to go back to. But that's a great point in terms of like we always imagine like, OK, well, the one rival is on one tribe and then the other rival is on the other tribe. No, put them on the same tribe. Let them fight from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't work out so well for Shane Gould. But it is an interesting thing, like Lockie and AK are in the same alliance.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how kind of works with it. Yeah. So Brooke and Flick as well. But like, I always felt like Brooke and Flick would be okay, because I thought like they're friends on the outside and this is like ancient history by Australian Survivor standards. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Lockie and AK, I didn't know if there would be any connective tissue there. So that's interesting that AK is there in that like young, good looking alliance. Like not to say anything about that, but just like to be working with Lockie so closely is an interesting one for me. But the tribes are so, I don't know if it's imbalanced, but it's just such a weird thing when there's seven people from some seasons and then you've got all these connections. Like you've got all three season one women on one tribe in one alliance. And then you have, you know, you've got all these rivals together. Like on one tribe, you have five people from season two, five people from the same season, which is the maximum that's even played on a season together in an All-Stars. Mm-hmm. Right, you know, that's what the Outback had in All-Stars, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then you've got five people from season three on the other tribe, so there's just like a lot of congestion there.
Well, it's hard because you only have four seasons and two tribes. Like at least in All-Stars, the first All-Stars, you had, you know, basically seven seasons to pull from. It was six and or it was five. And then there was Sheehan and then there was Rupert, each like one person from their own season. But there were three tribes.
Yeah, but that's why when they put these connections together to try and like get that interest out of it, maybe you should like keep them a little bit separate at first because it's already so lopsided and congested. Like, yeah, it's just a lot of people on one tribe. And I do think that, I mean, it's crazy that Makuta has won the last two immunity challenges because they seem, I think, comparatively quite a lot weaker. Like if you break up Michelle and Shawnee, who seem like each other's like mirror image, you know, Brooke, Flick and Phoebe are all pretty comparable. Like if you're kind of breaking up those pairs, I think it seems a little bit more fair. How would Shane Gould have gone at some of these like massive wrestling challenges if they had not voted her out? Like when they had that wrestling challenge where Abby's like twerking in Phoebe's face and looks so dangerous, I just kept imagining someone dragging Shane Gould into the water. It's like, thank God she's not here.
Yeah, the challenge is very physical to start off.
Dangerous,
yeah,
that I might say.
Major difference between the US and Australia that we are really, I was like, oh my God, somebody's gonna get really hurt.
Poor Nick as well. Like when Zach got injured, he's like, we'll just forfeit the point. And they're like, all right, two versus one. And Nick is like, that is absolutely not what I said.
Yeah. At least David like was like, all right, we don't need to two on one, Nick. like, all right, let's just, you know, let it, let's go. I'll hang out. I'll be back up.
Nick tweeted that he imagined them just like picking him up from either end and just swinging him into the water. Which they definitely could have done. And I'm so glad they didn't. Someone could have done that with Shane Gould. Like, these challenges are not fair.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but just my thoughts on the overall cast, just because I haven't been able to do it until now, which is a little crazy. Yeah. It's pretty good. I think I like about 2/3 of it. So hopefully those are the people who do well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, do 100% on these things. And the beauty of this is that we're gonna have tribe swaps. We're going to have this is going to shake up at least twice before we get to the merge.
Yeah, but my worry is, like, whenever you have an inconsistent cast, like something like a Game Changes, you know, the it's all the opposite of the cream rising to the top. It's like it makes sense to kind of get rid of, like, to keep the lesser characters. Like, it's already happened this week where the winners went first because they're big threats. And, like, obviously that is going to happen. It makes complete strategic sense to get rid of threats and stuff like that. So I'm really interested in how All Stars manifest on Australian Survivor. Will the threats kind of keep each other around? Will they be, you know, getting rid of each other? Because then you could be left with, like, 8 nobodies at the end.
Yeah.
And probably Dave.
In terms of Shane and Jericho, like, I think it was probably a mistake to have them out there. It seems like that, you know, the lessons of these other, you know, past seasons where, you know, you have, like, an uneven playing field where even, in the first All-Stars where they were, okay, it was easy to target the winners, or something, a season like Game Changers where you have, Sandra and JT and Tony, and it was sort of easy to say, okay, like, let's go after these people because they're winners. I feel like either maybe you need all the winners and put them on the same tribe so they have a chance to be able to do something, or if you do 3 tribes of 8, you could have at least 4 winners on the same tribe, so they have a little bit of a fighting chance to get together. But just to have them, Shane and Jericho, go off 1-2 like this, you know, it's just almost like, you know, it was like a victory lap for them. It was like they weren't even here.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like that they brought them back because there's only 4 winners. Pia's not going to come back 6 weeks after winning Leave Her Kids again. I don't really know what happened with Christy.
Why, she'd be the first one out, maybe.
Yeah, she probably would have been. I mean, yeah, Pia and Christy are probably looking this season just like in. Such a good choice not to be
call.
Here. Yeah, I think that they should have brought them back because it's Australian Survivor. We're not US Survivor. We don't know if we're getting another All-Stars. You know, we're not guaranteed anything. Shane Gould's not getting any younger. Like, put them back in the season in the small chance that they make it through, which was a very, 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 very slim chance. Like, as Liana and I were saying on the preview, there was, like, no pros, especially for Shane Gould, for, like, either of them, because they're not even going to be saved by their physicality or anything. But in the small chance they make it through, I think it's worth it. I think they both really delivered. Like, Jericho, if anything, like, heightened his legacy as a social player. Shane Gould was so epic, going around sneaking in her Nana shoes, pointing behind Harry's back. For the episode we got her, I thought she was, like, unbelievable. I knew she wasn't going to be long for the season, but in the small chance they make it through, you wouldn't fight it, and unfortunately they didn't, but I think it's better than just not even giving them the chance.
Shannon, you're so tapped in. Do you know, did they reach out to Christy?
About Christy.
Did she say no, do you think, or do you think they didn't want her?
I have actually no idea. I mean, they should have had her. I think definitely get
they should have had her,
can.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not sure.
I was not the biggest fan of her game from the doing the podcast about that
season.
You think
Nicole's here? Nicole, you there?
My wife?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, it's Shannon, come on. You think that means that of all the things that I could be podcasting about, that she might be listening?
Okay, that's insulting. I think on every podcast I do with you, I ask if Nicole is listening, and you always say no. So.
I mean, she's no. She maybe like in 10 years, I think she might have listened to about 3 or 4 podcasts that we've
ours.
Done. yes, of our podcast. But no, I feel like that. I mean, there's definitely, you know, women on this cast list that she could have easily replaced. So I wonder if she said no.
Yeah, they've made some
like
weird decisions. From what I understand,
maybe
some of the women.
Jonathan. We wanted Christy.
I don't know if that was terrible JLP impression.
I can't do it on JLP.
I thought you were trying to be like Crocodile Dundee or something.
We made a mistake, Shannon. I should not have even attempted an Australian accent.
I loved it though. I don't know how much I trust production. Who cast Zach? Do they know what's going on? Like, no, that's a bit harsh. But I have heard of some snubs that I think are crazy, and I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't approach Christy. But I think that if so, that was a mistake. But I really don't know. Like, if she said no, it wouldn't surprise me either.
It's okay. Well, Christy and Shane and Jericho, they're all going to have a chance to come back on Australian Survivor Season 40.
When so no one gets voted out. That's exactly what they need. That's exactly what Jericho and Shane Gould needed, was edification.
I was going to ask you, Shane, don't you think it's unfair that that Shane and Jericho here are going to now, they don't even get a chance? That's it?
Getting voted out Survivor is so unfair. Imagine Shane Gould just welcoming everyone to Edge of Extinction Reem style. That would be really comforting.
Yo, Daisy, that's it? No, this is the end of her story? Don't you want to see what goes on after this, Shannon?
Aren't you wondering what Daisy's doing right now? Isn't that the floor in the series? As soon as she gets voted out of that epic tribal council with so many stakes, aren't you like, but what's Daisy doing? I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very excited. And so I want to see what's going to happen next. And I think that would be actually very fun in the Edge of Extinction of this. Don't hang up on me for saying anything would be fun. But the way that she was blindsided, she doesn't know that David was the person that imagine that reveal, though, when, you know, like to see the look on her face when she's like, wait. It was David.
Edge of Extinction, like, does David make this move? Because, I mean, probably David does because he's crazy, but other people might be dissuaded from it because they're still in the game. So let's just hope that those three, Jericho, Shane, and Daisy, aren't just hanging on an island somewhere. Although I did love the very awkward date that Shane and Jericho had on the truck. And I do think like an extended sequence of that at Edge of Extinction or anywhere would have been really fun. But I am glad that, as much as I enjoy both of them so much,
don't drag me. I'm not advocating for the Edge of Extinction. I just think it's interesting that in her parting words, you know, she has this blind side, and it's not even like a thought in her mind that David got revenge for season 4.
Yeah, let's finally get into talking about this tribal council and why she wouldn't be considering why David, you know, would get revenge. And that's because why did he do that? He's her ally. And for anyone who needs their memories refreshed, the person that David thought was going home when he got blindsided was Daisy. So that's pretty petty. Like, I love David. I've said once in a generation character, the man is vindictive. Like, never say he's not vindictive, because like Luke said on Talking Tribal that they were like upset that Daisy had really twisted the knife and like gone on and on about how she was going home when she knew that they was sending home David. But it's like, that's Survivor. Like, that's a blind side. Yeah. And David has held onto this for admittedly just like 2 months. And like, that's inconceivable.
It has been a very short amount of time.
It's been like a week, but still.
Yeah. But no, in the opening, when Jonathan asks her why are you here? Why are you here? And David's like, revenge. And he wasn't joking.
Yeah. So we've got
serious.
We've got John and Abby on the other tribe, and Harry, all people who voted him out. So be afraid. Be very afraid. The spectre of season 4 in general is really interesting to me because the turnaround for 5 people was so tight. And I think you can see it because when they're talking to Harry, they're saying, you know, when they're talking about Harry, they're like, he's really tight with Abby and John. It's like, well, probably no tighter than people from other seasons are, but it's just so fresh in everyone's mind. And I really don't think that it was a coincidence that Harry was immediately targeted, because he was what they were watching on TV when they left to go film. Mm-hmm. That's a hard spot to be in. And even more impressive than from David, they, you know, hadn't even seen him be voted out yet. In fact, I think they were going out right around when we podcasted, Rob, so try and put yourself back in that kind of mind frame. And they still want to work with David. Like, that's so impressive.
Yeah, he's so much fun to watch. I'm not sure how great of a player he is, because I feel like
that's such a hot take.
Yeah, that is David. I love him. Is David considered to be one of the all-time greatest players?
Now he is. People are calling like the best move ever. I want to hear your take on this.
It's day 7. It's day 7 of a 50-day game. There were a lot of moving parts that I felt like that Matt Rogers easily could have blindsided him there. That was a lot of unnecessary risk to vote out someone who was in his alliance. This was a very, very risky play. Sure, it worked, but I don't even know if that was a good move. If you're in a 7-person alliance and there are 4 people in the other alliance, you should probably vote out somebody that's not in your seven on day seven.
all good points. The logic of it.
But I love David so much.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of TV, he is unbelievable TV. In terms of this move from a play perspective, like, there are some issues. He's got a lot on his plate. Like, he now has to stick the landing of what he just did for himself because Matt Rogers could screw him, so he's got to be keeping Matt Rogers happy. But I do think that kind of having that really secret alliance is the best part of this for me in terms of, like, the logic of what he was doing, because that's really powerful. No one sees it coming. If he can maintain that, I love that for him. But other than that, yes, I mean, he did break up his majority. He did send someone home based on a vendetta from the last season, which isn't unbelievable. And yeah, Matt Rogers could have turned on him for sure. Like, he could have just... He has an idol in his hand. He knows exactly who they're voting for. But at the same time, David read Matt Rogers correctly to know that he wouldn't do that. So props to him on that.
Right. But I just feel like that Matt came away from this. I felt like with so much more than what David got. And David just got simple revenge on Daisy. Great. David is still playing. Yeah. Lots of chizzy points. But is that like Fire Tokens chizzy points?
Oh, so much better.
So much better. But no, so David is still playing Australian Survivor Season 4. He's still playing last year's show. Matt is playing this game and this show, and the tight four that he has, that he showed how willing he is to go to the mat. They're all like hugging him and like, we love you, Matt. Plus, he has this incriminating information about David that he can go back. And I really thought that he was getting lucky to maybe to flip his vote at that tribal council. Like, boy, everybody is looking at Matt because I think that they're going to see that what a loyal guy he is to his people. And David, meanwhile, is throwing his people under the bus. I think that maybe you want to go to where the safety is. There's no safety with David.
The problem is if he does flip on David here and uses the idol to take out David or something, like, where to from there? So, like, either you take out David, in which case the six are just staying together against you and you don't have any in or any information from the other side. Or you keep David in and try and, like, exploit a Daisy-David disconnection if you tell her what happened, if she'll even believe you because he didn't vote for her. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, again, she has to believe you. And at that point, you've left David in the game. Yeah. And he's vindictive against you and you didn't go with what he wanted. Like, say that they keep David in the game, but don't work with him, hoping to pull Daisy over for a 5-5 in the future, take out like a Phoebe, for example. I wouldn't keep David in the game after screwing him over. And who knows, then you win challenges, then you might you know, swap tribes, and then you've got David out for blood, and look at how vindictive he is. So I think that he did know that he had a lot more room to play than Matt Rogers. I love what Matt Rogers did, and I do want to get into it. But I think he kind of knew that Matt had to work with him. It was in his best interest, I think, long-term, to work with him. There's a lot of mutual benefit to these two powerful players working together secretly across alliances. So for him to read that and to be correct, like, it's something I have to credit. It was bold and crazy, but he pulled it off to absolute perfection.
Yes. And I do not want to give out the impression in any way that I think that Matt should have tried to blindside David at that tribal council. I was worried that he did. I think that this ultimately ends up being like a win-win-win for Matt, where his people love him, David is happy with him, David wants to still work with him, but then he just has this secret to be able to blackmail David at any point if he goes to all those people that are upset about how Daisy got voted out of the game. So actually, well, you guys want to know how we knew to vote for Jackie at that tribal council? At any point, he could turn everybody against David. And so,
but isn't that what you would think he would say? Like, David could just say, like, he's lying. Like, I didn't vote for Daisy. I think, like, Matt needs to come back and obviously sell that he just knew it was Jackie. But even if he didn't have the information, I feel like it was really obviously going to be Jackie. Like, it's not Mo Hope because they're, like, shoving her name down your throat. Probably not taking out Matt and Tarzan, who you need for physical challenges. Like, Jackie was the obvious choice anyway, so it's not so unreasonable that he would have just guessed that it was Jackie. Mm-hmm. And he could definitely
sell
that.
But it's twofold. It's twofold. Really threefold in that, you know, that it was David told them about that it was going to be Jackie. And it was also because David had a vendetta against Daisy. And then it's like, And do you believe me? Like, yeah, it totally seems like something that David would do. So,
it's so crazy, though.
I think that he could, I mean, especially when it's, you know, like when we're talking about like the like Phoebes and AKs, people that are already maybe on the fence with this big alliance, like you only need a couple of people to jump ship. I think that Locke is somebody who's not going to really love this type of playing both sides that David is doing either. So I just think that David really opened himself up to a lot of potential problems down the road. And I love it. It was it was wonderful to watch. David is incredible. I'll be, you know, on the edge of my seat every time he goes to tribal council, that I hope he doesn't go home. But this was just wild.
Yes, it was definitely wild. But like, okay, say Matt Rogers goes to AK, wants to sell out David. It's like, look, David is the lead. It's like, okay, well, he didn't vote for Daisy. But okay, like, okay, so why did he do this? And Matt's like, well, he's still holding on to that grudge from the, like, it just sounds like almost too insane to be true, but I definitely think he could sell them out. That's what I'm saying. It's like David now, it's like a two-part move, as often these things are. Mm-hmm. And David is a force of nature, as I've said. He can rally through anything. So he has to now, he's juggling a lot of balls. He's juggling like 15 balls, but if anyone can juggle, I do think he can do it. He has to come back. He has to keep Matt Rogers happy. He has to kind of keep that connection secret, make sure people don't know he's the leak. And another thing that he did, which in seeing it was so impressive, after this whole tribal council, for David to verbalize in confessional that he wants Brooke to flush her idol, for her to get up and play it on him was so beautifully done, like such incredible manipulation. Yes. But then you sit and think about it for a second and you're like, well, she is an ally who's willing to play an idol on him and he knows where the idol is. That's basically, then that's definitely the next best thing to actually having it in his hand. So obviously he now has to go out and find the idol because that's the only thing that'll be better than the situation he just, you know, got rid of. And he's never found an idol in the jungle. He's only ever found it in popcorn and Sean Hampson's pocket. So there's a lot of confidence. I hope he can pull it off. But if he can, he's got this connection. He's got his own idol. So it's like, how is he sticking the landing of all the balls that he's juggling next week?
Yeah. He's playing so hard and it's so much fun to watch him try to pull this off. And I'm loving it so much. He's the most incredible narrator that I think any U.S. or Australian survivor. I feel like it. Can you think of anybody that's a better narrator than David?
I know this is going to sound super biased, but like, I do think that there are two really good narrators that we've seen on the season. And I think Nick is one of them. Like, I think he is a really great narrator for like the super fans as well. But yes, David in his confessionals just has a lot of personality, maybe more than anyone.
And Nick is wonderful. And I really love what Nick brings to it. But I think that in terms of, you know, David, that I feel like it's almost like, you know, Boston Rob, I think, also does this very well, where he talks directly to the person at home and sort of explains what the move is that's coming up, where, okay, I'm going to do this. And tells you the reasons exactly why they're about to do what they're going to do. And it's, you know, very fun. I think Suri is also somebody that does a really great job of, you know, talking to the person at home and talking about like setting up exactly what they're about to do. But it's just it's so fun to watch as a viewer.
Yeah, I mean, it really is so unbelievable. He is the most entertaining, crazy, petty person that I have seen. And his shocked face at that tribal council is, I think, a gift for the ages. Like, what? Like, when Daisy is going home. And then did he like, when Brooke played the idol on him, he like kissed her on the head. He's like, thank you so much. And then Daisy, and he's like shocked and he's sad. It's just like, it was hilarious to watch it. I definitely see the flaw in logic. I definitely think he's made himself, you know, he's given himself a lot to do next week. He's given himself a lot of work. But like, if I trust anyone to get that done, like I kind of do trust him to do it.
It's just such a marathon. If this was the U.S. version where, okay, 39 days and you'd be closer to the end. But, you know, Australian Survivor is such a war of attrition that I think it's so hard to play this hard from the start. I mean, look at the people who've won the game. They are not the type of people who play this aggressively. And maybe this is a different ball game because it's the All-Stars and we'll get a very atypical winner. But I think it's just very hard to sort of like start playing this hard and then have to keep it up like that. I mean, you've talked about, you know, Harry, where, you know, he was playing really hard and then was able to like take his foot off the gas a little bit to be able to get so far in season four, that David's just making this very hard on himself.
Yeah, yeah, I do agree with that. And I do think that I've come to the point where, okay, if I'm going to put it in order of what I would like to see from Australian Survivor in terms of strategy, you start, you know, ideally you start slow. But if you're not going to start slow, second best would be doing big moves well, which I think David just did. And the worst is doing big moves badly. And we'll talk about Henry soon. But I think that's kind of where I sit with it. I do really wonder if All Stars will change that, because as it was kind of verbalized by Nick in that first tribal council, it's like, none of the winners were driving the bus from, you know, from day one in Australian Survivor because it's so, so long. So, yeah, but David also has to be who he is. These are crazy players. If you look at the fact that he's working with Matt, who was working with Henry, and they had these cross-alliance alliances, cross-tribal alliances, and they're the three who got voted out with idols in their pocket. Like, for better or for worse, they're going to be that player. They're going to be bold. They're going to be loud. They're going to make big moves, and it will sometimes go really badly for them because they're risky. They're not playing their idol when they maybe need to because that's a more conservative move. But sometimes you'll get, like, brilliance from it. I think that if that can win in any season, it's probably All Stars, and even then, probably not. But we're all the richer for it in terms of viewers.
Yes. Jen, I want to get your take on David in terms of like where he's positioned in this game, because he mentioned a couple times this week about how I'm not used to being in the majority. I play from the bottom.
Yeah, what was the champion six, dude? That was like 2 weeks ago. How can you not remember? He really remembers the betrayals and not like his alliances in the same season.
Yeah. But so I think that people have sort of like this story about themselves that they just like tell themselves, okay, I'm the underdog or whatever. And so for David, it seems very important that he's always, okay, I play from the bottom. This is so weird. I don't know what I'm used to. Do you feel like that David is almost like trying to rearrange the situation where he's in the majority, but he still is playing from the bottom while he's in this majority of seven?
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I think it's like a boredom thing. Like, it's not even like a strategic thing. I just think like he had very little time to be bored in Champions versus Contenders. He was on the bottom a lot. Like, after he left, obviously, the Champions camp, he was, you know, on the bottom of that swap tribe, and then got blindsided shortly after the merge, and he was fighting. And that's probably like where he revels in the game, where he enjoys it, probably where he feels he does some of his best work, certainly his biggest moves of his last season were in that position. So I think he's kind of hoping to maintain his status in the majority while also being able to pull crazy things off that you get to do more so in a minority. You know, you don't get to activate a correct idol play if you have the votes. You don't need them, you know, like the vote's correct. So for him to kind of be like on the right side of the majority, but also manufacture an idol play, that's the kind of fun stuff he wants to do.
I think it's weird. Some people are really good at being playing from the top, and some people their more natural feeling is feeling like, okay, I'm on the outs, I'm the underdog, and I'm going to, you know, play that way.
Yeah, I also think that like the reason that he wouldn't really want to be in a majority just by itself is that he's quite a selfish player. Like, unless he's with Luke, you know, for him, like what we've seen with Brooke having an idol, like other people might be like, great, my ally has an idol. That's basically like me having one. Same thing happened when, you know, Janine had an idol. Wasn't good enough. He had to torch his entire game to get his own idol, even though he knew where the idol was and it was in the hands of one of his closest allies. And that's very similar to here, like the risk that he's taking to get the idol into his own pockets out of the pocket of an ally. That's kind of crazy. So I think that he is a much more, like we've seen him with Luke and that's how we remember him, but he's actually like a much more solo player than a team player. So being just like in the strong majority, kind of working together, probably doesn't really gel well for him.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what he ends up doing and how long that they're going to have the same numbers that they have in this tribe.
I also like, I think it's so interesting that you say some people play from the top and some people play from the bottom. And I like love the about face for Matt Rogers now being the leader of a minority group because, you know, being on the wrong side of the Jericho vote, I'm pretty sure it was like the first time he's been on the wrong side of the vote. I don't really remember what happened with Russell. That was a bit of a crazy vote, but he was in control of his entire, you know, other than getting blindsided, he was in control of the whole game from an extreme majority. He's almost the opposite of David, where it's not solo at all. He gets his minions, and which he has now, they're just the minority group, and leads them. But I really like that for him. I like seeing him on the back foot and how he works with it, because I would agree with you to say that I think he did amazing. And where his allies, it seems like when Jericho got voted out, just kind of laid down to die, he kind of like picked them all up, put them on his back, went to David and, you know, got an idol from Henry from the other tribe. He, you know, went to David and made this connection. He got all the information, probably came back to his allies like, what have you guys done? Because I've done so much right now.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mention, you know, what happened with the vote with Russell Hance, because I felt like that he played like Samoa Russell Hance. And yeah. Of course, the best version of Russell Hance, where he had his tight four. He was going to go to bat for his tight four. They loved him. And one of the things I always say about Survivor is it doesn't matter so much what the total like numbers are of the group. Whoever is like the largest, tightest number is who's ultimately gonna win the day. Like that's how the four people from Foa Foa can take down Galoo, because those four people ended up being tighter than, you know, any grouping that was within the seven. And I kind of feel like that Matt has a chance to do this. And now that David has sort of like weaponized this information that he gave him about, you know, all these things that he's trying to pull off with this group. So I think that Matt is in a really good spot coming out of this tribal council.
Yeah. And the way that he stood up and like played it for Jackie and really used that in terms of loyalty, like would you guys do that for each other, was like trademark Russell Hance. Like that's how Russell got coach over, right? Like, look how loyal I am. I played my idol for Parvati. And that was really what Matt was doing, which I thought was really, really good. Like, if anything, he can lead a group. Like, I can't even imagine The Godfather without an army. You know, like, he really is an army leader, and he needs to do it. And for him to now do it, it's very, very handsy, and it definitely is like he's got his little foe for 04, so I don't know if, like, Jackie is winning the season against him or something like that, but, or Mo Hope.
I taught Matt Rogers everything he knows.
No. I think that if Matt Rogers knew that he was like coming off handsy, and he might actually change his game a little, even though it's working for him. But like something Russell never did.
I also taught Zach everything he knows.
That one I can buy. That one I can definitely buy. But like Russell wasn't going and like really working with Laura Moret.
Yeah.
You know, like at least Matt has that where he's working across the aisle.
That's right. So, you know, it's a very interesting plan that I know we talked so much about David, but this idea that David has come across of like, hey, like I've got my people, you've got your people. Why don't we just like, you know, keep the bottom feeders fighting. We'll keep the votes off each other. And that's how we'll make this work. I can't think of a time in Survivor history where that's ever been attempted.
Well, we're going to get tweets about this because I'm sure there's something that we are missing, but it's really true. Like, I think we see these alpha personalities really go against each other. And we often see them go out one and two, you know, Josh and Jeremy, you know, are the example that come to mind, but it happens so often. And then for these two people to kind of say, like, David knows that he's the alpha, you know, he's the one who's actually in control, but he is giving a lot of power to Matt. He does let Matt win the day, which must be difficult as an alpha. He can't like brag about what he did because he technically voted incorrectly. Matt Rogers is kind of, you know, having to keep David on side definitely and kind of suck up to him probably a little bit. So it's interesting for alpha players to not just butt heads and to kind of give each other that room, which I do think has a lot of strategic benefit.
But for David, the win was Daisy went home, so that he was like he was able to get that victory. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever. You won today. I won the year because I sent home my nemesis, Daisy.
Yeah, I think that like whenever Daisy and David get to chat about this, she'd just be like very much like Annalise from season 2 of Australian Survivor. Why? Why did you thought I was going home when you got voted out? Like, she wasn't even an ally that betrayed him. She wasn't even like an Abby. I'm just so confused about the revenge plot.
And Jay-Z went real hard after Matt Rogers at the tribal council, too. She's like, hey, that's why you're on the bottom.
Yeah, famous last words. I love so much of what Matt Rogers was doing. One of the things I actually really loved as well was him fake pretending to read the faces. Like, this is the evolution of it where Tony kind of put that into the game where you read faces, right? When you're going to play the idol, you say you're going to play it on one person, read a face, change it. And he knew who it was. Obviously, he has the intel, but he did that to fake it. And if he hadn't been faking it, it would have been pretty obvious when he said Jackie and Flick just puts her head straight in her hands. Like, great poker face, Flick. Like, he's trying to read some faces, so have a poker face.
Yeah, that was really fun. And I thought that, like, wait, what is he up to? What is he up to? And then he ends up switching. I wonder if when you're going to play that move, because you say, I'm going to go play this idol for me. And then he walks away. And Jonathan asks, are you sure? And I wonder, like, does he always say that? That's sort of like the, you know, Regis, is that your final answer? Before you go sit down? Because like without the are you sure, like it does seem like he might start counting the votes.
Well, I mean, but he's not actually counting votes. He's not actually reading faces. Like, he knows it's Jackie. Well, he's trusting his read on David, which was correct. And maybe, yeah, like, Jonathan was kind of feeding off more of the Matt stuff than we saw, obviously, because he probably never expected to play it on him. And even without the intel from David, I don't see Matt Rogers ever playing this idol on him. Like, that's the whole point. Like, he is the Russell Hans. He is doing it for others. He probably knows he's, you know, pretty insulated by being, like, a real physical asset as well. So if he didn't get this information from David, I honestly still think he would have got it right if they voted for Jackie. She seems, like, really obvious. And he is. He's a leader. He's, like, selfless in that way for his group. I don't see him ever playing it for himself.
Yeah. But between us, that if Moana ended up going home, I would have been fine with that also.
Yeah. Moana versus Daisy was like a better prospect than like Shane versus Harry, and then Jericho left, and it was like, give us a break.
Once they play the idol on David, I'm like, all right, whatever.
I don't care about any of you people.
I don't want to say that, but the names that were being thrown around is like, all right, let's see.
So true. David is my rooting interest on that tribe. On the other tribe, I think my heart's just beating so much for Nick, and like, I know he didn't get any votes. That's the first time Nick has ever not got votes in a tribal council.
Very congratulations to Nick.
So proud. Took him to his second season to do it, but he only went to 5 tribal councils in the first season that he did, so he did get voted out at 2 of them. That's the same stats as Chris Underwood. Fun fact. Yeah, but I'm just like, my heart is beating out of my chest for Nick all the time. I can't with this.
Yeah.
God forbid he actually has any actual heat on him. I cannot handle it.
I mean, this is the Australian Survivor wrap up. I guess we have to give the Nick High Dancer
Nick
report.
Watch.
Nick Watch. But yeah, look at Nick through 3 episodes. I mean, I feel like for Nick, hard to have had a better start than this week of Survivor.
I feel like you didn't, like, the way you said it was like unintentionally quite insulting. Like, look at Nick. This.
And I say this as somebody like, you know, because I think about sometimes like, well, what if I ever went back? And I would think like, oh, okay, well, I probably would just, you know, flame out instantly. That's probably, you know, how it would go. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not in Nick's head, but I would have to feel like that the fear for Nick to ever go back is like, well, I'll just get voted out right away. And that's going to be the issue. But it looks like Nick is not in any sort of danger and really has his feet under him. And just think of the possibilities now, because if Nick is not going to get voted out instantly, it means he's going to have a chance to play. So I'm so happy for Nick.
Yeah, it seems like the podcast hasn't really hurt him in a way that it kind of like was bad for Steven and probably would be bad for you. It's like, are people not listening to this as much? Because that's kind of insulting. But I did feel good for him coming in, because as we've said, like, there are just way bigger snakes. And I think people realize that now. I think like the history has been kind to him to kind of look at like, why was Nick a snake again? Like, even his magazine was the Moral Dilemma thing, which was like kind of snaky, but also like a pretty like bad self-deprecating moment. He can kind of sell that. Like, it's not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't mean to sound incredulous about Nick still being in the mix on day 8, but I'm so happy for him. Yes. And you know, there are people like this that are in this Survivor season 40 that I feel the same way about, like an Adam Klein, you know, mm-hmm. the, somebody that, you know, I feel like that if they can get their feet underneath them, they're going to be, you know, very dangerous and deadly in the game. And it's great to be able to see him potentially have that opportunity.
Yeah, Rob, I will never forget when you had your mom on the podcast to talk about the Cambodia cast. And she was like, oh, Steven, such a nice boy. And I kind of want to get my mom for like 5-minute segments on the podcast for Nick Watch, because the way her Nick analysis, she loves him so much. He was so nice to her at the wedding. And she's always mm-hmm. like, oh, Nick, he's so clever. Oh, he's such a good speaker, Nick. He's doing so well. And I just like, her enthusiasm for him is so wholesome to me. And I want that on the record.
Yeah, I mean, Nick also has a very underrated social game. I feel like that
now
we never got got to see in season one because he was, you know, from the bottom so much. And I think that Nick might be one of those players who is probably a lot better playing from the top than playing from the bottom, because that I think that, you know, where Nick is, if Nick's on the bottom, now he's scrambling and like, okay, well, what's he up to? What's he doing? Whereas if he could be relaxed and sort of like in the numbers, and I think that he's going to be somebody who's going to be well connected. He's never going to completely ignore the people on the bottom. I think that Nick is going to be potentially in a really strong position to be in a majority group where he's really going to get a chance to talk to everybody and play his game. I mean, I think that that's probably the same for myself, where I feel like if I was in a situation where if I was in a group, a solid group of like five or six people where I can sort of like be, you know, working with everybody and not having to scramble, you know, I would be, you know, thrive in that situation as opposed to sort of like, oh, okay, it's like me and another person are on the bottom. That would be worst case scenario. I'd be nervous. I'd be stumbling over my words and it would be terrible. So I feel like that Nick is set up extremely well.
Yeah, I've always said to Nick that I thought that the best part of his game in season one was the Tegan vote, where like he could have put a vote on Tegan and assured, because it was a 2-2-2 split. He could have, you know, if he didn't trust his new tribe, he could have done that and been so sneaky and just like fulfilled their idea of him as a snake and just assured himself that he wasn't going home. But he didn't do that. And he was almost anti-strategic. And I guess when you're like so strategic that you have a survival podcast, you kind of have to do that to fight against that image. And he was just really social. He was really helpful in the challenges. So that's what I want for Nick. And like to even just see him yelling so hard as like the cheerleader in the challenges. And I know like I'm hyper focused on him, so I'm kind of noticing this stuff, but for me that's all I want from him, like to see him with the Rascals, to have like real genuine friends.
Yes.
To see, I really want to talk a lot about Henry, but to see Henry come to him with these moves and for him to be like, this is not the time, you start slow, you don't need to drive the bus, you're sticking out too much, I'm like, yes, Nick, yes,
yeah,
so much better, this is what we need right now.
Janet, the Rascals are so much fun. Really, I mean, I thought that the David Alliance on the other tribe, the quote unquote young attractive people, I thought that was a fun group. But and this is really fun, the Nick and Harry and Shawnee group.
Oh, this is the dream. Like, it's really convenient when your favorites team up. You can kind of all root for them at the same time. I would like for them to kind of find a way forward with Henry, who's also a favorite, and Michelle and Sean. Just get all my favorites in the one alliance. That would be great. But the Rascals are just like a dream. Like to have these three together. Like, and that's the only real alliance we've seen from that tribe. So hopefully that kind of means something.
Right. Snitches get stitches and end up in ditches.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Don't forget.
I mean, I don't think that applies to me. Like, I don't know when that would come into my life. But for them, very prevalent. But, like, so let's talk about Henry. Let's kind of get to the Makuta side of it.
Okay.
Oi. Oi.
Yes. This was the concern, right, with Henry, because I listened to you and Liana before I started watching the season, where it was like, well, you know, it doesn't really feel like that Henry felt like that he did anything wrong the first time out. And he's like, no, I'm going to be right back where I left off.
Right. I mean, he even says in the episode, he's like, the only thing I did wrong was not playing my idol. It's like, that's so results oriented. And that's not a great takeaway from your season. For me, it seems to me that he would have played the Art of Shane had he not been blindsided. Do you get that same impression? Because if so, then the fact that he was just blindsided, thought he had the numbers on Harry, it seems. He obviously voted for Harry and then didn't have the numbers. I think if he'd known, actually had the awareness to know what bad a spot his group was in, he would have gone out of his way to take an idol from Tribal Council and the first Tribal Council, and we can never know to be sure.
Yeah.
But on day two, to take that, to play for Shane Gould, who was not long for this game and was going to have to be dragged in the next physical challenge, would have been an insane play. I think he was saved by himself by his own bad read, if that's true.
Yeah, it would be insane for him to, because he didn't have it until after he got up to walk out of the Tribal Council. So he would have
he could have had to stand up,
He would have to stand up and say, excuse me, Jonathan, let me just go get something. Like, go grab the idol out of the tree.
Well, happen on Survivor South Africa, where the idol was, like, right in front of Nico, the host, and someone had to stand up and just literally take it from him in front of everyone.
it's one thing to, you know, save yourself, you know, or a key ally deep in the game. It's another thing to make that move to save Shane on day three of a 50-day game.
Do you think he would have done it, though?
Who knows?
Because I do.
Yeah, I don't know. It was crazy. I didn't really feel, other than like, hey, I'm going to make a big move. I didn't really even understand what he was going for.
Yeah, and I want to say, after saying Oi multiple times, that I love Zen Hen as a character so much, and in many parts as a player, as I've said. I think he's his own worst enemy. And just like the language that he uses about the game is my concern. The way that he's like, oh, to have an idol for the first three tribal councils would be like so epic to make like a big move here. It's like, it, you know, maybe, but as I've said, doing a good big move for me is still below playing it slow to begin with. And the way he's like, if I don't, you know, use the idol, it'll blow up in my hands. It's like, it actually really won't. Like, it'll just passively kind of fade. The fact that he thinks that that would be a blow up for him to not do anything with it on day, you know, by day seven is kind of the problem.
Yeah. Shannon, can I ask you about when Henry told Matt Rogers, he gave Matt Rogers the heads up about the idol clue back in the first challenge. Did you like that move?
That was the only thing I liked that he did this week.
Yeah.
So harsh. I really did like that because I do think that Matt Rogers is maybe seeing it himself, quite possibly.
Yes.
So, and like, again, a powerful ally. I love the ingenuity of the cross-tribal alliance. I just do really enjoy that. So I like that part of it, but it's unfortunate that AK saw them switching the idols, so I wish they'd been a bit more down low about that relationship. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did like that from the get-go.
Yeah, at first I was like, what are you doing? Why would you tell him? And then I sat with it for a little bit. I'm like, no, I really like that, because he's probably going to find it anyway. He's probably going to see it anyway when he goes over there. And then it's like, yeah, why not get a buddy on the other side? And then maybe that ends up paying some dividends. But just like thinking about this week of the game compared to Henry in season two, where he ended up sort of like switching to the other tribe for no apparent reason. It does seem as though he's so ambitious in the game. It's like, hey, I don't want to just be running things over here. I want to expand my sphere of influence to, you know, have a say in what's going on at the other tribe too.
And the thing that's so unfair is that the game for Henry at the beginning is so easy. You're not going to get targeted. You're so strong. You're very likable. Like, other people would kill to be in this position, you know, for Shane Gould, for example, but any of like the you know, kind of smaller women, I'm sure would love to have that like protection of knowing innately that you can kind of do what you want and you're just a strong presence that they can't get rid of because you're a challenge beast. But then he like makes it so hard on himself by saying like, I don't think he threw the challenge, but like he and Matt were both kind of happy for the challenge to be lost. Like, this is some crazy stuff. And then again, like the worst sin of all, to be making these moves when your read on everyone is wrong. Like, you can't read that the entire tribe wants Shane Gould out. Like, everyone knew for weeks, forever, that Shane Gould was first boot of the season. It's so obvious. She is literally an old lady who won. So you're trying to protect that? You think people are going with this? Like, that is such a bad read on what is happening.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a strong play from Zen Hen to start off the game.
No. Yeah, I mean, look, the fact that before the first ad break, I want to talk about that idol, which I loved, but the fact that before the first ad break, you have him finding this clue, this big game player, telling Matt Rogers about it, is really just amazing. Was such great TV, the way that he's celebrating, like, he is, again, electric TV. So it's just like, that's why I'm like, dude, just slow down. And then you can do this all in, like, 3 weeks, but to be hoping you lose the first tribal council to lose the first challenge, you go to the first tribal council is crazy anyway, but even crazier when you're like in as bad a spot as he was, where he was one of the only people to vote incorrectly.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that is something that, you know, we had really campaigned for a while, that, you know, to have more of these idols that were like shot clock. When Steven and I used to do the first couple of think tanks, that was something that we're like really pushing for, idols that have to be used by a certain amount of time. And, you know, on Island of the Idols, like, it was sort of like a little overboard with it, where there were so many, it was hard to keep track of them. But I think it does force players to, you know, to the person with a hammer, the world looks like a nail. And to the person that has an idol that can only be used for three tribal councils, they think it's some crazy moves.
Yeah, and I think it's not a coincidence that we saw a move happen here with the Shot Clock Idol that we'd only seen happen once before, which was Kelly Kim doing it a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. Like, these two people did the exact same thing independently of each other without either season having aired at the time of filming, and that was to orchestrate a plan, vote incorrectly. Like, I had deja vu kind of watching Dave vote, you know, incorrectly, you know, talking about how Daisy is going to go home as he doesn't vote for Daisy. Like, that's what Kelly did. It was pointed out to me that Julia Sokolowski did a similar thing with Ty in Co Wrong, but that didn't work. So for this to happen for the first time, where two people successfully pull off this move, vote incorrectly on purpose and kind of orchestrated on the other side, is not a coincidence. It's like, it's this Shot Clock Idol. With Kelly Kim, it did end up, I think, being ill-conceived. And in her Ponderosa, she was talking about how originally with the idol, she intended to use it to idol out Dean. And then when Dean wasn't the target anymore, she used it to save Dean. Like, she just wanted to use that idol. And there might, you know, be a little bit of that in this, where Henry's thinking, if I don't give it to Matt, it just goes to waste, and I don't want that to happen. So it just really puts a lot of, like, the trigger back in the game.
Yeah, so we like this, that they have, just don't go crazy where then, you know, every single week we have a different Shot Clock Idol.
No, not necessary, but I just love so much of the way that this was put into the game. Like, not just that it was the Shot Clock Idol, but also that it made that first challenge really interesting. It then made the immunity challenge interesting because there was, like, some incentive, kind of erroneous incentive to throw it, which was interesting. It then made Tribal Council really, like, it gave a new layer where they had to find it at Tribal Council. And something that I really liked about it was that by putting it there in the hero spot, you're definitely going to put it in the hands of a big game player, of like an alpha type player, which I don't usually love, except that, you know, women tend to find more idols in the jungle in Australian Survivor anyway. Brooke did go and find it. Maybe it's a bit of a cultural thing. So to put this temporary idol, which might not even be that powerful, just for three, the first three tribal councils in that spot, you know, if someone like a Shane Gould just happens to find it, then she's probably just using it defensively. That's not as interesting. We've seen, like, the Rick Devons of the world, the Bens of the world do it. It's just strategically a little more straightforward. But putting it in the hands of someone who's going to go and untie the knots in the hero position, a Matt or a Henry or whoever that would have been, means that they probably don't need it early because they're a physical beast, but they're a big game enough player probably to try and use it offensively, maybe even against their best interest. And that could create a big move, as we just saw happen here.
Shannon, can I ask you a question about the trade-off between Henry and Matt Rogers to hand him the idol? Because we had a very physical, like, wrestling challenge that ended up happening. There's no way that Henry had the idol on him, on his person during the challenge. Does he get to the challenge and hide the idol and then wrestle and then go back and then pick up the idol?
All great questions. AK spotted.
So I wonder just, like, how conspicuous it was, the whole act of, you know, did he have to then stash the idol somewhere before the challenge?
Look, the pass off itself that we saw was not that smooth. AK's like, look, I think I saw Henry give Matt the idol or something much more inappropriate just happened. Like, you know, that's the best case scenario. I also loved Matt's terminology. Like, I'm going to talk to Henry about, you know, doing the idol swap. It's like, well, it's not a swap because you're not giving him anything. Like, Henry will swap his idol for your nothing. Like, that's just a handoff. It's not a swap.
For goodwill.
Yeah. And, like, look, I do think that Henry has to do that. Like, you know, obviously Matt knows he has it. He knows he doesn't need it. I think that he would probably make Matt Rogers very mad, something you don't want to make mad if he doesn't do that. But yeah, I mean, who knows how that could affect him later in the game. The fact that AK saw it and told everyone is not great.
Yeah. Also, Shannon, I haven't had the chance to say this yet on the podcast, but I'm so glad that AK is here.
Yes, AK.
I know you love AK.
I
love AK too. I'm so happy that he got a second chance to play.
Yes, but what about him specifically?
I just think that he's so fun. I feel like he's almost like a you know, teenage Russell Hance without some of the, you know, the bad stuff that we were talking about.
That is the most insulting thing I've ever heard anyone say the teenage Russell Hass is
fun. He's fun to have around, aka, and I like that the way that he really seems to enjoy playing the game. I love him in an alliance with David. So
yes, the Silver Prince and the Golden God.
The Silver Prince. I didn't know he was also seems very good at throwing things also.
Yes, I mean, I was so worried for AK coming in because in my mind it was like going to be, okay, I could see that seven, the Cookie Alliance without AK, I could see those six coming together. You know, I was worried for Jericho too, but like Matt Rogers definitely has his like older people and I was like, where does AK fit in? And he fits into that group and that's amazing and his reads have been so good and he did see the idol handoff and has been like, I think, really essential. And also, like, we've seen episode 3. At this point in AK's last season, he had, like, made up a fake idol to play a real idol, you know, like, it had been a lot. So he obviously has slowed down from that, which I think, much like Nick, is, like, something he needed to do.
Yeah. And he has really cool penmanship, if you check out his votes. Next time you go to the Tribal Council, check out AK's voting penmanship. Something I always like to look at. It's like calligraphy. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he did say online, I think, that he tries to change his handwriting for the voice, which is very sneaky.
Oh, interesting.
So that you can't read it.
Yeah, you should have had him do your wedding invitations, Shannon.
My wedding invitations were pretty amazing. I mean, AK also wanted to DJ the wedding. So, like, legitimately, we actually got our videographer through AK. Legit, like, from Adelaide. Like
Randy Bailey?
If only. No, like, AK shared a video because they work together because a videographer and a DJ, and we were like, oh, we love this. And we flew him in from Adelaide, and we definitely would have got AK if we had a DJ, but we had a band. So just, like, you know, we could have just had AK doing everything for the wedding. Did the invitation, did the DJing. I don't have a... Being the celebrant, being the rabbi. Imagine AK the rabbi.
He could be throwing the bouquet also. He's good at that.
I'm just imagining AK as a rabbi now. I feel like there's a pun there, but I don't know. I want to get into AK as a swing vote. I just wanted to say one last thing on the Henry thing. This is something that's been pointed out online. My brother had a great tweet about it. The symmetry, the circular nature of Henry's relationship with Jackie. They find the idol together. He leaves her for dead without the idol, without the numbers on the other tribe last season. Now he is the one who finds the idol and gives it to save her. He finally made good on that shared idol. He finally, I think, paid her back. So that
Who had that? Your brother, you said?
Yeah, he had a great tweet about it. I did see it a couple of other places, but it's just beautiful to watch.
Yes. No, incredible. Incredible. I guess you have so many people that have all these shared relationships. Almost every single one of these is going to be something like that.
That is true. I mean, that is a positive. But that was his idol coming back. I want to talk a bit about these votes for the winners. Jericho going home, I think, was very, very sad for me. I love Jericho. Yeah. I don't think he did a lot wrong. If anything, I think that he was really great. Did you see anything you thought he could have done?
What could he have done? I mean, it was interesting, though, that he ended up in the group. There was like a group of like younger people, and then there was a group of older people. I don't know if it was sort of like beach people versus shelter people.
Yeah.
But Jericho is a young guy. It's interesting that he ended up sort of roped in with the people that were like the Matt Rogers, the real beautiful people, I believe is what Jackie called them.
Yeah, I did ask him about this on the exit interview because I'm like, you are the youngest man on the season. You're with the old people. I totally agree. It's beach versus shelter. It's never an age thing. Dave is 40. Like, you know, like Jericho is 27. That's not how it's delineated. Yeah. It's as everything is. In a Survivor, it's just its values. It's just who you are drawn to. And he wanted to play with that group. But, yeah, unfortunate because it did really seem like AK and Phoebe wanted to work with him. I think that like, with them being, you know, the swing votes, and they both said online that it was set in stone and they were playing it up at Tribal and their allies knew about it and stuff. But, you know, with both sides wanting to work with them, I think that they probably would rather have worked with Jericho than Davey on an individual level, but they'd rather have gone with that other group. So I think that was a bit of an issue for him because it really seemed like there was a lot of connection there. They didn't want to take Jerry out.
Shannon, do you know from your exit interview, was Jericho blindsided?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Because he thought that even if they didn't vote with him, they'd be voting for more hope, not him.
Yeah, he talked about, you know, oh, it's hard losing a friend. And so I was wondering if that was a bit or not, because it seemed like that David thought that maybe Jericho was playing it up in his voting confessional. Ms. Shannon, now I have to ask you a question about the voting confessional from David.
Yes, the Seinfeld quote.
Yes, that do you feel okay? So he ends up saying, "That's gold, Jerry, gold." Do you feel like is David quoting Seinfeld there? Is that possible?
He definitely is. Like, firstly, that's like a really random sentence to be a coincidence.
Yes, yes. Okay,
but he also quoted
I have the clip.
So much. Okay, play.
Yes. Okay, here's the clip from people who are not Seinfeld fans when David votes for Jericho. I believe he says, that's gold, Jerry, gold. Here's Jerry with Kenny Banya.
Why do they call it Ovaltine? The mug is round. The jar is round. They should call it Roundtine. That's gold, Jerry. Gold!
What a obscure Seinfeld reference. I'm blown away.
I love obscure references. Most of what I say is obscure references. And he had You Shall Not Pass. He had that confessional where he was like, I'm with the youngsters, which was also referencing a meme, and I don't actually know where that's from right now. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. He's a reference machine on top of being the best character ever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's the right age to have been a Seinfeld fan. And I know from doing the Seinfeld podcast that there are a lot of Australian Seinfeld fans, but
yes.
We talked about this last season that there was a Seinfeld reference in season 39 that's escaping me. It was Festivus. Festivus came. Karishma talked about the airing of the grievances. Wow. Can't believe how much Seinfeld is invading Survivor.
You can't believe like the pop cultural phenomenon that is Seinfeld. Like it was an obscure reference for sure. It's not like, you know, these pretzels are making me thirsty. Like, it is a pretty obscure Seinfeld reference, but Festivus, I think, is way more mainstream. So this, I love it. I love the niche references.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. And I wonder if David is a Kenny Banya fan.
Oh my God. I absolutely love, I want to see, I've now counted three references that I can tell just from these first three episodes from just pop culture. Mm-hmm. So how can we track this? If anyone sees any references that David makes, please let me know so I don't miss
them.
Because
if there's
that.
A reward, is he going to say, that's not a meal? So we'll see. We'll see. I was so happy. But sad to see Jericho get voted out of here. But I don't know what else Jericho could do.
Yeah, it was so hard. Because like then like he has a thing where it's like he's also a really big social threat. Not really helping you in these like extreme strength based challenges. Pretty much everything we said preseason where we were like, oh, what is he going to do? Well, it was very much that, you know, like when I spoke to him on The Exit, which will be coming out, he was like, it was inevitable. And it kind of was. I mean, it's crazy that David was the one leading it when you would think that they really had this Luke connection. But yeah, I guess it didn't really transcend. Sometimes like friend of a friend. Sometimes I'm jealous, I think, of like your best friend's best friend. Do you think?
I hear that. I know how that is. Shannon. So when at that tribal council, you mentioned how, you know, that, okay, so AK and Phoebe were just playing it up and people knew. But why were they playing just to, so nobody played an idol? Is that why that they were trying to, because it seems like that kind of a way to like rattle your alliance to go through the motions and like act like you're sort of like, oh, I'm AK. It's like, I'm not going to know until I write the name down on the parchment.
Well, I don't think it was going to rattle the alliance because apparently they had told them before that they were going to do that and they were very locked in. I mean, they shared cookies. That's another thing with like their choice in terms of the swing votes. Like, even though they hadn't voted together, it felt like going with the Matt group would have been much more of an active flip despite it being the first tribal council, which I think it's like probably pretty early for that. So it seems like their allies really trusted them. And yeah, I think it's always good to, you know, have the other side feel pretty safe. And yeah, for idols, for anything, I think that's a good thing.
But make them feel safe. They, you know, why is AK saying like that? Okay, I'm gonna write I don't know the name until I go write it on the parchment.
That is true, and I do think that like another part of that is like coming back to camp. It's like, well, then they blame you because you were kind of like leading, you know, beating
you
them
tease
up.
Them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I also think, Shannon, that the cookies did Jericho in. Fact that they, you know, once they're eating cookies, it's like, oh, this is poetic justice. We should vote out Jericho.
I just want to say I saw this in a tweet, and I'm sorry that I can't credit it, but Angie Layton needs to be on Australian Survivor. You know, she, having said she wanted cookies, we all mocked her, and she was just before her time, because cookies, as has been said, more important than idols in Australian Survivor. So she knew what was up. Mm-hmm. That's how she meant it, I'm sure, when she said that in Survivor Philippines.
Yeah, Jericho talked about this, that, I had a dilemma in my season, and I listened to, you use that same terminology on the Talking Tribal podcast as well.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, I meant to congratulate you at the start of the show. So exciting.
Thank you. Yes, it was a lot of fun.
And the dilemma, I feel like, is such a, a part of the Australian show. And I really feel like that is the thing that I wish that American Survivor could import. There's just not everything has to be vote steal, vote advantage,
edge
vote cancel, vote block.
Yeah.
Yeah. That these little things end up being so meaningful. And I love, and I hadn't heard the term coined like that until Jericho was talking about the dilemmas. I love it.
And sometimes they don't pan out. You know, sometimes Simon has to choose who gets the biggest slice of pizza and is relegated to a secret scene on 10 play. And that's fine too. But when it works, which is often, it's so interesting. Like the duality of like Tarzan took the wood in season 2 was immediately voted out. Jericho took the cookie and won the game. So it became just like this really obvious and like beautiful narrative throughout the whole season, if it's used well. And if it isn't, it doesn't really matter, you know? So I think it is a really good thing. And I really, really enjoy the way that they played that for Phoebe and Lockie, because I've always said you need to come back and tell the majority of the tribe that you're going to, you know, at least close to the truth. And they did tell the 7 pretty much the entire truth, except for the fact that anyone could take that, you know, reward steal. It doesn't have to be the 2 of them, which seems pretty minor. But I think it's like when you come and give a majority a secret, like a specific secret, it's not just like you tell the whole tribe everything. You come to majority and like, nope, immediately come to them, as Nick learned, it has to be very immediate, but you immediately come to them and say, I lied, here's the truth. And then they're not going to doubt anything else because you've given them the secret, you know, like you lied to the others, so you must be telling the truth to them. And then like the shared chaos of the cookies and that like kind of like playful anarchy, I think is something that Survivor players can really bond over.
And it's interesting because I feel like that the germs of this were sort of like born in U.S. Survivor. And I think it really starts with sort of the like little things that they did at the start of like Kagyan, where, OK, you could have even going back to Tokenshin's of like you could have either, you know, stuff to do the camp or an idol clue. Right. And then they did it with, you know, Kagyan. And of course, you know, famously with the neutral box, which ended up being part of the problems for Nick that first time out. But, you know, they've done so much more with it on the Australian show, but they even like in the U.S. Survivor in Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers with the idol clue that was on the tray, you know, it ended up, you know, Australian Survivor ended up doing, you know, much more with that with, you know, the margarita cooler and David with the popcorn. So
which is gross and eaters, I think is what it is.
Yeah. They've been able to have so much more fun with these things. And so I don't know if it's just a product of like more episodes and more time to fill where they've had to come up with more stuff. But I always enjoy it whenever I see that in Australian Survivor. And I wish that they could do it more in the US version of the show.
Yeah, I guess with so much less time, you kind of want your twist to be really high stakes so that like they count in this 42-minute episode. Whereas like we have a lot of time in Australian Survivor and a lot of this is really low stakes. I mean, if you look at even just this thing that Phoebe and Lockie did, there wasn't even an idol clue or anything, even an advantage beyond the reward. There wasn't even an extra vote or anything like that. So it's pretty low stakes, but it just comes back to this like amazing scene, the incredible irony that they would, you know, get Jericho out with a cookie alliance. So it's just like these little narratives. And again, like if that didn't happen and you don't get that scene and you don't get the irony, it's relegate it to template. which I am on Template. So Template is a great place, but
yes.
We love Template. But you know, when it works, and it often does, because as many have said, like anything in the game is a commodity, then it's just like a brilliant narrative tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love Phoebe as well, letting Locke talk. I think we saw a lot of that strategy come out, especially in episode 2 with Phoebe. So being one of the best players to have played the game, I'm really interested to see where she can go.
I'm very happy Phoebe is back also. That this is another person that I'm really glad that they did this All-Stars where that she was somebody who, you know, played such a big game in that first season. People were so excited about Phoebe 1.0, and it's really fun that she gets another chance to play. So I'm really happy for some of these contestants that, you know, get their second shot at this thing.
Yeah, definitely. I do want to talk bit more about the Shane vote if we can, because there was a lot of questions. Why did Lee vote for Michelle? Highly ridiculed online, I have to say, because it was like completely out of nowhere. Like Michelle's name had not been brought up, and then the votes are being, you know, shown, and this Michelle vote was so random. So I just want to clarify that Lee has tweeted saying it was going to be a split vote on Michelle. Then apparently they backtracked on that because it seemed like the Harry plan was getting traction and they were nervous and he didn't get the memo. But just explaining that to anyone who didn't see that. And also, I kind of love, like, Lee's been really self-deprecating on Twitter, and I'm, like, loving this new vibe for him.
Yes. You mean Custard Arm Cascadin?
Custard Arm Castledine?
Whatever.
Cascadin. Where did that come from?
What do you think? I know. You're lucky I'm getting first names right on the Australian Survivor players.
So where you got it from? Wasn't even close to the root.
It starts with the same letter.
It sounded like it started with a K.
Yeah, well, it was with a C.
Oh my god. So Lee, by the way, getting that confessional where they flash back to his terrible performance, which was only 2 days ago, and then in one of the shots, like the ball hits him in the head. That was so harsh. That was so harsh. Because like he did then like win them a challenge and stuff. He is a professional cricketer, an ex-professional cricketer, so it wasn't great, you know, to lose to AK, but I think AK was really good. But how harsh is it? I think that was that his first confessional as well? Maybe his only confessional of the week was him just like being railed on in flashbacks from the show. You hate to see it.
Did he also have the injuries? Was he taking like his Band-Aid off?
Yes, ugh.
I don't know. I like had to walk away from the computer at that point. Yeah. Yeah. Please.
Custard me, Cascadin.
Ew.
I don't know why I find that so funny. So he voted wrong for that reason. What do you think about Lydia? Because I'm in two minds with Lydia. It's like she did seem to lead the vote, but also take a step back, which I kind of like. But then it's also like that petty thing with David. It's like, why do you still care about this? It's crazy that you're so hung up on it. You're an Olympian, the best athlete the game's ever seen. Of course you got voted out of the merge vote. Like, as if you're still hung up on that. That is, like, no one's fault.
I love it. That's one of my favorite things, are just that these like petty things that people can't let go of. And she doesn't even care if she wins the game. It's just like, okay, as long as I get Shane out, that's my nemesis. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it helped me at least give a worldview for what she was thinking going in. She's so adamant. Got to get Shane out.
Yeah, have to get Shane out, as if it's like this big move to take out the old lady who's like the only winner on the tribe. But like, I guess, great job. I just kind of feel like that's no one's move. Like, that's just so obvious. Like, the move makes itself. She's also petty, which is, again, great TV. But like, everyone in this game has played with at least 4 people. They all have like these things from the past. So I just don't get why she, like, even on the mat, that was what we saw from her. It was like Matt and Shane and Lydia talking about like the old, you know, rivalry. I feel like Shane Gould would be to Lydia like, I don't even remember who you are. Like, I won the game.
Joke?
It wasn't meant to be. But like, it's more that she just did so much that she voted out Lydia. She literally won. She studied chimp politics. She's got this like new degree and stuff. She'd be like, that was so long ago, Lydia. Like, you might be hung up on it, but I literally did not even remember doing that.
Yeah, the chimp politics thing didn't really pay any dividends for Shane.
Well, I mean, I actually feel a little bad about it because I did ask her about it on The Exit and she gave like a really compelling answer about it. And now I'm like, I feel bad for making fun of it. It did make for a great scene with everyone kind of like jumping around. Like, that's why it sucks to go on Survivor. Like, you're just doing anything completely, you know, irrelevant. But then they package that together with jungle music and make you look like a chimp. Like, the edit can be harsh.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think that chimp politics probably not that much different than human politics.
I guess. I don't know. Like, it feels like
based on my Twitter timeline.
Yeah. I want to apologize. I want to apologize that we didn't make a Shane Goodall pun in the
that would be good.
Shane Goodall. Yeah. It was all there. We also didn't do, you know, chimps versus contenders. There was a lot there.
Next season.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've said it now, and I've apologized. See, this is the thing. You hate to miss a pun. Then the next day someone texts you, like, Shane Goodall, and you're like, ah! Anyway, podcasting is a very hard job. Just letting you guys know.
Cool, Jerry. Gold. Cool, Jerry. Cool.
Yes. I know that, you know, she'd already been voted out, but she is on edge of extinction somewhere, so the pun still makes sense, probably. That's all I got from the week, other than Chizzy stuff, JLP tweets, and questions. I actually have quite a lot. Should we get to the Chizzy?
Go for it.
All right. Actually, before we do, I want to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
And we are back. All right, actual Chizzy time. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right, so good. Okay, time for the Chizzy. I'm going to give 3 points to David. I think that's pretty expected based on the way I've spoken about the move. Yeah, last year he got a lot of Chizzy points in an inevitably doomed game. So I'm wondering if that is going to be kind of similar this season, but like having led the Jericho vote and then obviously being controlling every single person at the Daisy vote and then to get the idol played on him, which again, logically, I don't know if it works, but like it was just so beautiful to watch and like 100% 3 points in terms of that. You know, I think the internet seems higher on it than I am even, and like certainly you are, and I'm pretty high on it. Definitely see the concerns, but I mean, it was like, I can't not reward that with 3 points. Gonna give 2 points to Matt. As I said, you know, loved everything he was doing. And like, yes, Henry came to him with the idol clue, and yes, David seemed to kind of approach him, but like, there's a reason David's not going to Tarzan, you know, like you have to be approachable there. And he obviously seemed like he was, and he's just like such a powerful player. The fake reading of the voice was amazing. And then the fake, you know, reading of the faces, great stuff. And then I'm going to give a point to AK, actually. I think because he has come the furthest since what I underestimated him in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Such a hard try for him to have both sides wanting to work with him is great. You know, I think his reads were on point the whole time. He saw the idol exchange. And, like, while he was outplayed in the last vote by David, it's like, you know, everyone was. So, yeah. And, you know, Phoebe obviously did so well with that, with the swing vote stuff as well and with the cookie stuff. But I just feel like, you know, this was a more natural try for her, so I kind of want to give AK that point, but I'll give Phoebe the honorable mention. And I want to give an honorable mention to Nick. I know that kind of sucks because I should give him a point. I just saw a lot more happening on Bakuma this week. But, you know, so socially connected. Obviously, that was an issue last time. Didn't get any votes in that first tribal council. Henry wants to work with him. He's got the rascals. Such a strong spot. super proud, and my mom is just loving it. So, Rob, what points are you going to give?
Okay. I am going to give 3 points to Matt Rogers. I did not come into Survivor Season 5 All-Stars expecting to be so blown away by Matt Rogers. I kind of, you know, I don't have a great recollection of Season 3, but I'm like, I don't really like Matt Rogers. But he really impressed me. I thought he did a really great job. Didn't think he was like overbearing or anything at all. You know, we've talked about, you know, what he's done for his numbers. I think he's in a really great spot. I think he played the whole situation with David so perfectly. He has the cross-tribal alliance with Henry. I give him a 3 chizzy points. I will give 2 to Nick. It is very hard to, you know, award points for, you know, what's going on over on the other tribe that we've spent so much time with, the David and Matt tribe this week. But I'm so happy for Nick. I feel like that he has his legs underneath him. And so I think he's in a really great...
Legs,
yes, yes. And I'm just, you know, it was fun all the way around. You know, he was in the mix on that first vote and, you know, was in a good spot, and had a funny moment in the challenge where it was going to be 2 against 1. So for Nick, who I was very concerned with coming into the season, to see him land on his feet and be able to be set up to potentially make some moves going forward, I'll give him 2 points. And then I'll give a point to David, too. I don't want people to think that I am a player hater or anything like that. I love David so much. He is my favorite character from the Australian Survivor shows, and I am so happy that he's here. I'm so happy he didn't get voted out. That I think that there are some potential problems with the move that he made, but you know, I don't want to be a wet blanket that, you know, give him a point. So... those are my chizzy points.
It is shocking that Matt Rogers just won this week's chizzy. I mean, I think he did amazing. I just definitely would have thought David. Like, I thought that you were going to be giving 3 points to Matt and 2 to David. So I wasn't expecting the 1. But yeah, that means Matt wins. And I've always thought that Matt Rogers is like a really good player. Like, he won the Danzy in that season, which hopefully, like, he and Nick can connect at a point and Nick can tell him that. It's something that he might care about. Like, I think, you know... Yeah, I think that he is a really strategically savvy player. I just thought that he needed a bit more adaptability, and I think I'm seeing a little bit more of that. So I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, and you know, I'll give honorable mentions as well to the rest of the Rascals, to Harry and Shawnee, for also being very fun. So there you go.
Yes. Speaking of Shawnee, I want to get to some JLP tweets. So the Shontent stuff is pre-game. Did you see this? Yes. Do you follow JLP on everything?
I've seen a little bit of it. Of what was, so they left Shawnee out of a lot of the pre-game promotion at their own peril. That was foolish.
Yes, they left out 10 players. And like I said last time, I thought the
10 play.
And 10 play is great. They left out subliminal messaging. It makes so
that
much sense. Why, everyone's been like, why did they do it? And now we know. We've been saying 10 players for weeks.
Yes,
go check out 10 play. In the preview, I couldn't reveal who I thought were like the crazy marketing snubs. I want to say Sean, Lee, Shawnee, and Michelle all made the top 4. Kind of crazy that they weren't announced. But JLP went rogue, like actively rogue. I can tell you this was not a marketing thing. The show was not on board with what he was doing. I was very much told, like, don't mention Shawnee in your chat with JLP. Because he just like kept posting about how Shawnee's on the season. Which she wasn't a release cast member. You're like really not allowed to.
He went rogue?
So rogue. Oh, the roguest. And then so like every day for the week leading up to it, the social media team, by the way, guys, it really wasn't the social media team's fault that the cast wasn't announced. Like that's way higher than them. But I do think that like making some noise of it was good because hopefully they won't do that again. Maybe. But yeah, so like every day into the lead up of the season, they'd have a photo of one of the released players and they'd be like 7 days or whatever. And then JLP would post that exact photo with Shawnee in it. And I had to wonder, like, so is he doing this himself or does he have someone to edit Shawnee into the photos? Because that honestly is, like, pretty good work.
Yeah.
Surely he's not sitting at his computer doing this himself.
Mm-hmm.
But who would be doing it for him? Like, the marketing team is definitely not because they were against it.
You think JLP can't find somebody to edit Shawnee into pictures?
I don't know.
It might be Shawnee.
Is that part of the job?
Wrong? Should I be putting more of the emphasis on the other syllable?
I mean, after casket in, I wouldn't worry about it. Like, yeah. It's fine. You're close. Shawnee. That's right. Shawnee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, he went so rogue. So you think that someone else was editing the photos? You don't think he's sitting there, like, on paint? Editing Shawnee in.
Definitely not. And yeah, I think that Shawnee is probably sending in like, oh, here's another one. Here's another one. Here's another one.
Interesting. Yeah, because some of them like did seem like Survivor photos. And then some of it was like, it feels like he just like, he got this from her personally. I think he's editing himself. If I ever get the chance to interview JLP again, I would take that opportunity to be like, were you doing that? Dude, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So if anyone who thinks that was like part of the marketing plan, like absolutely wasn't, and JLP is just like a madman, which is kind of great.
You want to rise above the noise? You got to do crazy stuff on social media, okay?
No, you need to give the Shawntent.
JLP knows this. You need the Shawntent. Yes.
You definitely need the Shawntent. And we really got it this week. And I like loved for Nick that he was like so high on Shawnee because I was like, oh, Twitter will love this. Like, good job, Nick.
Yeah.
He spoke for the people.
Yes. Great job, Nick. All the more reason to get 2 chizzy points.
Great job on loving Shawnee and like really knowing what the fans are going to enjoy. Excellent things. I want to go through some JLP tweets from this week. He tweeted, great strategy from Lockie swinging his sack so no one could land a nut.
That was in the episode too.
Yeah, that unnecessary.
Yeah, I was blushing watching the episode. He definitely is doing it on purpose, right?
Oh, yes, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. He like I feel like that Jeff used to, and Jeff is like, all right, you know, I'm not doing it anymore. But JLP is all about it.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, like a lot of these challenges were really erotic. this weird thing. The idol handoff, that wrestling challenge. I mean, literally the twerking in people's faces. Press photos are like really R-rated. I don't know what is going on with this. Imagine if Shane Gould was there.
That's why they had to get the production was like, hey, we're trying to really, Zaddy and Hot Girl Summer this calendar season up, okay?
If I had Bryce as the guest on this recap, like, I don't think we could release the podcast.
He's tweeting about it. He wants to know what's going on with this Australian Survivor.
I know. I love it. He slid into my DMs. He wanted to watch. I love it. Like, it's literally a cast full of Zaddies. To the point where like saying, oh, we're the hot people alliance is like redundant. It's like everyone's really hot. So
yeah.
I think that Bryce should do an Australian Survivor calendar. Just this cast even, I think, would work.
He's got Australian Survivor people in the Zaddy calendar. I know Zen Hen is in the Zaddy calendar.
Yeah, great pick. My personal pick, I think, would be Henry. Which is, I guess, something no one asked, but here I am saying it. And speaking of, so JLP also tweeted, oh, Henry, please don't do a Sean and poop that advantage out of those flimsy shorts. Are Henry's shorts that flimsy? Because I feel like this is something I would have noticed and I didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't go back and look at Henry's shorts. We also need a It's a Look podcast from Bryce, I guess, also.
We honestly almost did, like, legitimately. And then it, like, you know, he was busy doing his look for you. So, he just felt like he couldn't kind of bring it home with enough research for this season. But hopefully in the future, we will get an Australian Survivor Is a Look. You know who's wearing the flimsy shorts? Nick. You notice, like, the shorts are, like, very short. Like, who approved that, Nick?
Shannon, I don't have a lot of shorts content for you.
Okay, well, JLP does. He also tweeted, this time around, Henry knew that by wearing the skimpiest shorts he could find, there would be no pocket for his idol, forcing him to play at a tribal council. Why is JLP obsessed with these shorts? Like, I want to track this throughout the season. No one else is tweeting about this except JLP.
Yeah, stick to the Shawntent, JLP.
Not even Bryce Isaiah has tweeted, I think, about Henry's shorts. And JLP had more than one tweet about it. So, yeah.
Oh, let me see. Wait, can I find a picture of Henry's shorts? I didn't see them from the episode.
Go to his Instagram.
Okay. All right. Well,
I actually did go check it out after I saw those tweets. I'm like, they're not that flimsy. Like, Nick's was so much more flimsy.
Yeah, what does that even mean, flimsy shorts? That they just are, like, they rip easily?
I guess they're just like not doing their job properly. I don't know what shorts should do.
Okay. All right.
Okay, I'm looking at the shorts. Like, I think like they're normal shorts.
Like the picture of him with the torch?
Yes, that's the perfect one. That literally is the perfect picture.
Yeah, I guess they don't seem too durable.
They seem fine to me. I mean, I don't, like, someone's going to test this out.
Yeah.
Bring it down. This isn't a Bryce podcast. JLP also said, geez, Vakamar got totally stitched. Their camp is completely shite. Do you have shite?
He's camp shaming?
Yeah, and it's like your production. Like, that's just self-owned. Like, you did that to them. The thing is, he's actually shaming production, because I'm sure this is a rogue tweet.
He's just busting somebody's chops that works in the production team.
You'd hate to, like, be someone who works on Survivor and get, like, insulted by JLP on his Twitter. It's like, damn, man, just, like, call me into your office. Like, this is a very unprofessional way to do this. It's not the first time, too, I think.
To get roasted by the host of the show.
Yeah, like, last season he had a bunch of tweets about how mad he was that they weren't going back to camp after Tribal, which is, like, really a very good super fan take, and also just, like, that's, like, a genuine criticism with the show for the host to tweet. JLP is crazy. Editing his own content into photos. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, he, correct me if I'm wrong, he's not a producer of the show. Is he, like, like Jeff?
No.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a different spot for him to come in for, like, you know, as if, you know, for Jeff Probst as the executive producer of the show, like, it's kind of his thing, but as just, if you're just the host, I guess you can, like, sort of, like, you know, mix it up with other people that just work on the show more.
Yeah, I feel like if Jeff had the issues that JLP seems to have, like, he would just fire those people. Whereas, like, JLP will just tweet it.
Gonna be passive-aggressive on Twitter.
Yeah. Imagine if his next tweet is, like, you're also fired. Like, if JLP ever gets more power. Hate to see how he would wield it. All right. Should we get to some questions? We had so many questions.
Please.
It's overwhelming. I, like, woke up this morning to compile the questions, and we had, like, I think definitely over 100 questions between Twitter and the Patreon group. So thank you to everyone for sending that through. I'm hyped up that everyone else is hyped up about the show.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a question for myself. I'm just going to go with that one first. I asked, what is an Osher? Wanted to explain this to our international listeners. You know, they had that amazing bachelor sequence.
I think you're asking me.
Do you know what an Osher is?
No.
Oh, why did you then interject with that?
So okay, let you off the hook. I was relieved.
I was never going to make you do that.
Yes.
Okay, well, we've done it now. It annoys me that, like, so many of our listeners won't know what an Osher is because AK's Osher impression was so spot on. So Osher used to be Andrew G. Do you know who Andrew G is?
No.
Oof. Two for two. So Andrew G and James Matheson, who was the co-host on Talking Tribal Full Circle, used to host Australian Idol. And now Osher hosts The Masked Singer. He hosts The Bachelor. He's basically just like an Australian icon.
Yes. Really, like an Australian Steve Harvey.
Yeah, but very different to that. But, like, I get what you mean. That he's more than a person. Like, he's very much a concept. And he, like, The Bachelor, like, especially when they come in for the rose ceremony, he always talks, like, really quiet and really slow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think AK just nailed that. And I also thought that Bachelor sequence was amazing, that Daisy was, like, going on and on about Lockie. Cut to Lockie confessional. He's like, I like Brooke. You hate to see it. And then she went in a terrible way. So.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Great scene.
Do you think that we will end up seeing Lockie have to pick one of these three?
Well, I mean, it can't be Daisy now.
Yes, yes, okay.
I'd like to see it. Like, yeah, definitely get me some Bachelor on Survivor.
Okay.
Which is now between Phoebe and Brooke.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would definitely like to see that. Also, like, just completely unrelated to this, like, Daisy said very willingly that she would eat AK, and it was night one.
Yeah, that was mean. That was mean. Like, hey, who should we eat? I thought that was going to be more of a thing they said. Not since I saw Jeremy Collins first vote for Survivor season 40 did I feel like that was a weight joke that was made.
Well, what did Jeremy say?
You have to go read Jeremy's vote.
I've not seen this. What was it?
You were sleeping too long.
Was it today?
Yeah.
It was because I was compiling all those questions. Enough time. Tell us what he said.
Jeremy said he's casting his first vote for Nick Wilson because that Nick gained way too much weight to play just 3 days in season 40.
Oof. I don't know if that's worse, though, than saying you would eat someone, because they were all, like, having the discussion. You know, 12 hours into the game, like, you shouldn't be. And then Daisy was just like, yeah, I would eat AK. And it didn't look like it cut to AK and he didn't look happy with it. And then she went home. Are those two things related?
Good.
Maybe.
Good. Maybe she was like, oh, AK is a snack.
Maybe. Maybe that's what she meant. I didn't see him being the bachelor, though. He was relegated to being Usher. So, yeah.
Usher, that was another job at your wedding?
Yes, another job that AK did was to be an Usher. AK just, like, was doing it. Could have done everything at the wedding. That is just, like, a full comprehensive business. I still feel like there's an AK rabbi pun that Mike Bloom will come up with after the fact, and I will tell it on next week's podcast, much like the Shane Goodall thing.
He's got the kosher chicken idol?
Yes, that's what it is, the kosher chicken idol.
Yeah.
How did we get here? Okay, I have some actual...
Can't spell Hanukkah without AK?
Yeah, you can't spell Kaskaden without AK? It's just two letters. So, I have some actual questions from the listeners, as I said.
Yes.
So many.
Yes.
Emma Cox says, where does the Golden Godfather Alliance rank in the history of covert cross-alliance alliances? The Golden Godfather is such a good alliance name. I don't know if you came up with that, Emma, but I'm obsessed.
Okay. That would be David and Matt?
Yes. The Golden Godfather.
Golden Godfather?
Yes, yes.
I mean, how long do you think this is going to last? Do you feel like that this is going to be potentially like weeks? I feel like that maybe another vote or two.
I could see it being long term. And then I could also see it being broken down immediately and for the tiniest of reasons. Because it's like, where to next? Like, they both have to be made happy. But between them, they're also aligned with every person on the tribe. So someone's got to give. Is it David saying like, okay, Matt, like I saved you last time. Now your person's going home. And then is it Matt being like, well... Mm-hmm. Okay, then I will out you in this. Or is it, you know, Matt is insisting on his people because he's kind of, you know, blaming, you know, he could blackmail David. Mm-hmm. Dicey position.
To me, I just feel like that these two are not a match where that I feel like that even when, you know, Matt said that, you know, try talking, you know, with people rather than at people. Like, I feel like that the way that David even like gave him the instructions of like, okay, do this, do this, do this. Don't ask questions. Just tell him, do exactly this. And this will work out. I just feel like that they are not people that like operate on the same frequency. And I can't see this being a good match for the two of them. They're just such different people where I can't see them being able to, you know, keep this going.
There's so much strategic benefit, though. Like, if it's a personality thing and they both, like, don't want to be sharing the spotlight or whatever, sharing the power in an alliance, like, I could see it breaking down. If they can make it work, I do think, like, they completely control every single person in the tribe between them in a secret way. That's just so much power.
Yeah, we'll see. I would love to see it be able to work out where it's just so it's such a fun idea of like, OK, let's just both like throw the, you know, bottom feeders to the wolves. But Matt doesn't have that many bottom feeders and he likes everybody that he's with.
That's the issue. He needs to like get rid of one of them. But that's the whole thing is he's Russell Hance. Like Russell Hance doesn't just like feed Jason to the wolves. So
I would never feed Jason to the wolves.
He would just burn his socks, you know?
But, burn his socks, not the wolves.
How toxic is Russell's brand of loyalty where it's like he will, like, torture you, but also, like, not ever turn on you? Like, actually,
I would be loyal. be loyal to my friends.
Here's a question for you, not asked by the listeners, just asked by me now. Russell or Zach, what would have been better casting? I legitimately don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fascinated by Russell Hance. Yeah. I would much rather have seen Russell Hance come back, even though he not only burned Jason's socks, he also burnt all of his bridges with Australian Survivor.
Yes. But also, we did get some questions like who would have been a better replacement for Zach if he's such bad casting. And the answer, now that we've agreed Russell would have been better, is literally every male castaway that's been on the show. Every single one. So... there were so many options. Matt McDonald asked, just as idol searching led to people tagging searches, will keeping watch over nighttime players become the new meta game?
Whoa.
But Luke said on Talking Tribal, he's like, all the best stuff happens at night. Like, the sleep shaming that happens in Survivor honestly pains me. But you kind of need to be awake. Like, that's how this was allowed to happen. The Matt David stuff, like, you cannot.
Yeah, was Luke talking about on the podcast about the night moves?
Yeah, yeah. It's apparently, like, this is, like, when are people going to sleep? So unrealistic. Yeah,
that's when the alliances happen, when everybody's sleeping?
Yeah, isn't that what happened to you?
I don't know. I was a good sleeper on Survivor. So it seemed like maybe Robin Amber had something, night moves going on, maybe. But in the Amazon, I don't remember a lot of, like, alliance talk happening at nighttime.
I also feel like the Survivor Bachelor crossover thing, like, night moves could mean anything, as you said. So I think, yeah, someone needs to be awake and make sure that nothing can happen. So keep it to the daytime.
That's right. And it's a good thing that we don't do an Australian Survivor wand off, or we'd be flooded with Bob Seger.
Yes. People want that, though. I mean, I do have Josh Wiglon on the podcast next week. So.
Oh.
Yeah. But there's a lot to cover an Australian Survivor without a wand off as well for just the one podcast. So I'll get to that when I plug the shows. Last question. Tail Garling asks, do you think players should have to commit to a name and not get the chance to change their mind when playing an idol? While it often saves players I feel like you can go to say any name, gauge the reaction, and change your mind. Flick really telegraphed that he was right. I mean, he knew he was right, like he had the information. But anyway, yeah, just generally.
We don't need to be that ticky-tack. I think that everybody needs to have a poker face. Like, everybody's like, okay, just tell your alliance, like, hey, remember, just in case they go up there and, like, try to, like, do anything, like, just act normal, or act like, oh, you got us, or whatever. And then they say, okay, the idol's played with, like, we don't need to, like, rewrite the rules for it's fine.
Yeah, like, if anything, like, you know, it's not the show's fault that Flick did that. Like, it's only her fault, you know? So I actually love that you can do this, because it continues to evolve strategically. The fact that Tony even thought to do that was so brilliant, and, like, he really, you know, took the game to its limits to do
Jeff,
that.
Can you validate this?
I hope we see that soon. I am hoping to see that next week. But, like, I mean, I hope he doesn't need an idol next week. Oh, my God, I'm so nervous for Tony. But, yeah, like, the fact that you can do that, that it's based on this, like, really ultra-strategic thing of just reading faces. For me, that's, like, the purest, best type of Survivor. People can get it right. I love that. And, yeah, if you don't have a poker face, like, that is really on you. So, and the fact that Matt did it here to fake it and to have even more so that he could go back to camp, you know, tomorrow, and they say, well, how did you know? Was there a leak? And he says, Flick put her head in her hands. Like, you're joking? Like, of course I knew. So I think there's so much strategic benefit there. I love that they can kind of make a meal out of that moment, or a snack, as AK is to Daisy.
Yes, AK is a snack.
With an A and a K.
Yeah, you can't spell snack without AK.
You can't spell so many things without AK, I'm realizing.
Yeah.
On that note,
That's
all I got. But what is the hashtag? So many good ones. Hashtag kosher chicken idol. You're going to see a bit of a running theme. Hashtag AK the rabbi. Hashtag custard arm casketin, which part two, because how do you spell that? Hashtag the golden godfather is just like a good one. But I love kosher chicken idol as a late entry.
Okay.
We did it. We decided. Rob, as my guest, what do you have going on? What is happening in your world right now?
This is it. We're done. We're wrapping up.
Yeah. What did you have more?
I don't know. Let me look at my notes. Hold on. I'm like Caitlin. You don't know who that is, but
I'm in tune enough to know who cares.
Yeah. Let's see. Ovaltine, Roundtine.
Yeah. Yep. Got it there.
Who's a cheeky bugger?
What?
So we talked about, was it AK? Is AK a cheeky bugger?
I guess. Do you have bugger in America?
Yeah, oh, Lockie has a quick release, so watch out.
Your notes seem like they were stellar. Did you have more notes in between it, or was it just these 3 points written down?
These are things that we didn't talk about.
Okay.
Let's see.
Good stuff.
Cold opens are fun.
Yes.
I want to get a subscription to Tribal Life magazine.
Yeah. Oh my God. I would love that. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'd love to write that magazine. It's a terrible gig. They do it once every season.
Yeah.
It's just one job, but.
Also, I liked when everybody was on the open idol hunt and Tarzan like completely dug up a plant out of the ground. Like, would the idol ever be hidden like underneath like the roots of a plant? Like, I just feel like that Tarzan really went overboard.
I don't know if we've mentioned Tarzan on this podcast yet.
Yeah, but so... he's my winner pick, Chad.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God, Rob, explain the pick.
Okay, first off, it's Australian Survivor, so it's going to be somebody who is just sort of there. So
there's
a lot of people that fit that criteria. I also feel like that, you know, we talked about the Shawn tent and the lack of Shawnee. I felt like that Tarzan was all over the pregame press. I thought that Tarzan got a huge push. I don't even know why he's back on this season.
That's logical, but the casuals are like, oh my God. So,
okay. I guess so. You're telling me that Tarzan is a more popular figure in Australian Survivor than I give him credit for.
Yes. Okay. You know, for the casuals, he's our Rupert. I mean, he lasted 4 episodes.
Rupert, 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my pick. I think that people like him. He's got a good story. He's got like a funny one liner. Keeps everybody laughing. He's no threat to anybody. Seen as a loyal guy. So I have Tarzan is my winner pick for All Stars.
I feel like if Tarzan wins, the season will be bad. Okay. Doesn't happen. Like that. Yeah. Like what? That like if David wins, the season. Is amazing.
Greatest season of all time.
Yeah, so that you just know. And like, if Tarzan wins and the jury's validating that and he somehow gets, like, I could see him getting there. I just feel like that's a bad season. So we'll see. Hope you're wrong.
We'll see. You know, I feel like that, you know, the winners on Australian Survivor, with all due respect, you know, have not always been the most exciting players, and we have great seasons. So
I honestly think that I would rank the winners the exact same way I rank the seasons. 2, 4, 3, 1. So there might be a connection there.
But I just feel like that the winner of the season doesn't have that much of an impact in terms of like, you know, how great the season is as a whole. A lot of times that they're sort of like quieter figures who really didn't define the season in the first place. So I don't think that necessarily matters too much, but we'll see. Well, one other thing I want to say
that he'd be screwed on the next All Stars.
He'll be screwed if he comes back for Winners at War. And then also just to go back full circle to David, has it been talked about enough that in like his first time out there, the similarities between David and Tyson?
You compared Luke to Tyson on a podcast we just did.
I think that David is a better Tyson than Luke.
David's too expressive. Like, David is so extra and Tyson is like very dry, and I feel like David is like yelling. Yeah
So you feel like that Tyson is more unemotional. I just feel like that they have like a similar sensibility. Tyson I think has like a more I'm trying to think of the right word to describe his absurd sense of humor than David does. He's like more of an eccentric, but I just feel like that they do, like, I mean, don't forget, like, you know, Tyson in Heroes versus Villains, like he's got some like wild plans too.
Yeah, in terms of like plans and craziness. I honestly don't think anyone, like, in terms of plans, I'd be comparing David to like a Tony, you know, but yeah. Like, in terms of like personality, I just think that Tyson is much more just like the chilled prankster. I mean, for Tyson to come up and kind of be, you know, injuring his arm, fake injuring it and sitting back and whatever, and having that like emotional understanding to know he kind of has to step back a bit. David, I just don't think has the capacity to do that as well.
Yeah. Because I feel like that maybe that Tyson is sort of like the in-between between Luke and David, because Luke is almost like he's like a giant kid. Mm-hmm. I feel like that he just has like so much energy and he's so exuberant, where I feel like that's not Tyson. So maybe he's sort of like the halfway point.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think they're all connected by fun, strategic jokesters, you know, like as a broad umbrella, which is like a very fun archetype. Maybe that'll be like the next thing Australian Survivor does at the Marooning, and they all have to come in like clown costumes, just like the jokesters. But yeah, I mean, I can kind of see it. I just think no one is like David, and that's like the best part, is like it's really hard to be like who would you compare to him in Survivor history, and it's like he is just the golden god, like he's his own thing.
Yeah, he's great, and you know, once you guys are done with him, they should get him on American Survivor.
He
more
said
things
deep,
for David.
Deep dive, he would do it. He can do it. He has a green card. Like, imagine, like, he honestly would make an American season so good. Any season.
Yeah. Because so few people would probably even know who he was. So he could come in and, you know, people would be like, oh, an Australian model. Like, oh, okay, oh, cool. You know, and so, you know, there would be some super fans that would know him. But I think that he could potentially like land on a tribe where nobody knows who he was.
Yeah. It would be so good. Like, if the American producers aren't, you know, watching some scenes from this, just the popcorn scene, and I guess like this tribal council now are just so iconic, and then they wouldn't cast him, like that would be a really weird move.
Be a weird move. I mean, okay, let's bring in the Canadians, bring in the Australians, let's do this. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, but David
we brought in Russell Hance, you can now take one of ours.
Yes.
And also like us taking Russell and you taking David is like we're losing $10 and finding 10 cents, but
yeah.
It's so mean to Russell on this podcast. Do you think he's listening?
Yes. Russell? I don't know. Russell invited me to be on his podcast today.
Are you going
to
do it?
Should I do it?
No.
No?
No, I think you can do it. I just thought he was like, you can promote your podcast. It's like, I don't.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. That's good. I don't care. I would do it.
I didn't do it.
Yeah.
But okay. Just all let right. him, like, let him know. Like, you're not doing it to promote your podcast. Like, you're doing him a favor.
No, I know. Well, look, I'm not above. I think it would be so funny. I would be like dying laughing the whole time.
You should do the whole thing in the Russell Hans impression.
No, I would love it. I think it would be fun. But you know, we'll see. We'll see if the timing works out.
We just don't ask him about Australian Survivor because he like really started like a war, not a winners' war for him, but a war with my country.
No, he doesn't need to make global tensions any higher. That's fine.
I mean, he's not welcome here. So.
Yeah, but I'm so excited for the season, and I just wish, I wish that these two seasons weren't happening at the same time.
It's painful. It's really, really painful. Like an embarrassment of riches, but also. I've said that I feel like it'll make me a little bit more disconnected from Winners at War, even though I am podcasting about it. But at the same time, I think I'll just lose all the sleep I currently have, which is honestly pretty minimal. So I think that's where I'm going to go. But like the good news is, like this, like Australian Survivor is over in like 2-3 weeks, right? Like flow through the whole season.
Yeah, goes by quick.
By
goes
March, by quick. And then you'll have like months left of Winners at War. But it's such a big couple of months to be a Survivor fan.
I know. But it's so hard like to say like, okay, well, let me just put it on pause and then I won't be spoiled because I'll definitely be spoiled too, like if I don't keep up with it also.
Yeah. And it's hard because I think you also want to like, well, I definitely want to like consume every bit of content for these seasons and like kind of have to for the show and for the podcast. So like all the secret scenes, every single, you know, CBS All Access or 10 player thing that happens, I want to watch it. I have to watch it, and this is a lot of content for me to get through.
Yeah. All right. You're going to do it. You're the queen of International Survivor.
I guess.
Yeah.
Thank you, though.
Yes.
It's been a lot. Like, I mean, do you have more notes, or can I start plugging what I'm doing?
No, you're good. You're good.
All right. Well, yeah. So I actually want to announce that I am going to do a Survivor Global podcast. I think we've worked out week one for the premiere with Lisa Stanger. So that's cool because we can really geek out about these winners.
Yeah.
And she being a winner, obviously, can talk about it. She's an RHAP legend. Like, it's such a good guest from Survivor New Zealand for that. But Rob, you know, you also never said what you had going on. Like, you just said you might go on Russell's podcast. I hope that's not all you have going on.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we have a ton of stuff going on. I was on the Masked Singer US wrap up this week. I did that.
I'm
going to be on the Star Trek Picard post show recap later on this week. So
Getting
be on the lookout for that
before season 40.
I'm about 90 minutes away from podcasting about the Survivor season 40 or retrospective that's going to be on CBS tonight. So I'll be doing that with Mike Bloom and Chelsea Walker. Then after that, I'm going to be podcasting tonight with the First Lady of podcasting. So be on the lookout for that. So ton of stuff going on over at robhasawebsite.com and post show recaps. And if you want to jump in, this is really the time to jump on in to our Rob Has a Podcast Patreon, of course, that we do have the episode links or a lot of this Australian International Survivor.
Yeah.
Try to keep it all in one place, make it very easy for people. We've got discussion threads going on. You can ask questions for this show.
Many questions.
Yes, and much more going on in our Facebook community. I'm going to be doing a new show, Shannon. Did you hear about this? That I'm going to do the Survivor US pregame show on Wednesday nights.
I did hear it. Did you hear my suggestion for what you should call it?
Yeah, the Know It Calls?
Yes, bookend the show with the Know It Calls and the Know It Alls.
I think we should call them the Know It Callers, but I think that might be confusing to call the show the Know It Calls.
How is that confusing?
Is it too cute?
No. I think it's good. And you also can't spell KIA without AK, so.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's true. Can't spell KIA without AK.
Yeah. So it's meant to be. Although this would be KIC.
So all right. All right, and then you and I will podcast about U.S. Survivor once you get through with everything going on here in Australia.
It's a lot. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's a lot.
Yeah, and Rob, I wanted to say, because it's 10 years of RHAP.
Yes, 10 play.
Yeah, 10 play years. And, like, I just want to put my experience out there of just, like, finding the show, finding RHAP, which my brother introduced me to in 2012. It's done a lot of good things for me, but this is number one, I think. And becoming a patron, honestly, was like the best decision I've ever made. Sorry to my husband if there's anything else there that I should have said instead. But yeah, like, I mean, it's actually crazy, this community and like the opportunities I've gotten from it and the fact that like my best friends are through it. And like, it's insane that a podcast can be so life changing. But yet here we are with it changing my life so much. So I just want to thank you for bringing the community together. I think it's like nothing else I've ever experienced or seen. So,
well, Shannon, I'm just so happy that you've gotten some of the recognition that you deserve. And I'm so proud of you with all of the work that you've done on, all of the different Survivor franchises and especially your new gig over at 10 Play on Talking Tribal.
Thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Talking Tribal is happening. So it comes out immediately after the Wednesday night episode. So that's like a good immediate breakdown. For a lot of internationals asking where you can watch it, like all the fun visual stuff, I think is going to be on social media. So you can see that in terms of like experiencing the content, it is also a podcast that obviously anyone can listen to. And I think there's extra stuff in the podcast too. I haven't even listened to it for week one, but it's 8 minutes longer than the show. So there must be some extra stuff there. So like definitely check that out. I hope everyone does. It's been so fun working with Luke. I'm obviously like a huge Luke stan, like to go from...
Who isn't?
Yeah, I mean, but like after he was voted out, Reddit was very much like check on Shannon Gates. And now we have a secret handshake. So like, what is life? You know, it's not a great secret handshake.
Yeah.
But
did Luke tell you that who he is his better friend? Is it Jericho or is it David?
Well, I decided for him that like David won that. So.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he won.
Didn't Jericho pay to take his family to like Disneyland or something like that?
Yeah. And then he comes there and he like gives his kids all these Christmas presents. Yeah, you know what? It probably is Jericho, unless like David wins this season and then he could take them to Disneyland. And then it'll just be a Disneyland off, which sounds so fun. Like to be Luke would be amazing.
Yes, it would.
Jericho had a great video on Instagram, like crying over his, you know, being voted out. And then it just changed to him just like throwing cash everywhere. That's the way.
He made it rain?
Yeah, he did.
Are you sure it wasn't fire tokens? Is he on the edge of extinction?
He's on Winter of the War, as he should be. So yeah, follow us at Rob Cesarino, at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hack-Ups feed to get all of these podcasts, to get Survivor Global. As I said, Josh next week will be my guest, so that's amazing. And just one little note about the season. We're going to be doing, as you'll know if you're, you know, experiencing this podcast and listening to it right now, we're going to do separate exit interview podcasts, because I think that's just a way to kind of, you know, get up whatever is done first, you know, so you guys can listen to it before the next week starts. So we will have one podcast of all the exit interviews for the week, and then the recap. So those things are now separate. That's all I got. Those are all the notes that I had. Did you have
so
more?
Make sure you're subscribed. Yes. So you make sure you get everything.
Yes. And rate us.
Yes, of course. Rate and subscribe, and tell your friends to subscribe.
I always tell them to tell their friends. Do you think that that people will do that?
I don't know. who would be more convincing? Is there a threat that we could make if they don't tell their friends?
Yeah. What will we do? I don't know. I don't have any threats in me. You do something. You're our leader.
I'll be hosting this podcast next week.
You don't tell your friends about this. Russell's my next guest, which honestly sounds pretty interesting. I would actually be here for it.
Yes. Also, should Andy have gotten the call for All-Stars?
Oh, Andy.
Oh, over Zach, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, yes, every single person. Like, I like Andy. I feel bad about how our relationship is weird, I think, because...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it is what it is.
I was thinking of people that were fun on the last season.
Andy definitely should have got the call over Zach. Anyone could have. I just was at the premiere party with like Maddie Wahlberg, who was like very similar to Zach in being this like just like very like almost like aggressive alpha male, who also wasn't sexist. So it's just a better version Zach. Pre-merge alpha male who wasn't sexist. Better version of Zach. Anyone. Matt Tarrant's a great one. Liana said Sam from season 3. There's a lot of season 3 going on. I mean, that would have made it 8. Oh, no. Sam was also in season 3. It would have kept the same ratio. Yes. Anyone.
Okay.
Any single person. Any single male person you can think of. And if you can't think of anyone, just make it a 23-person cast. Like,
sure.
We've done 19 in US Survivor. It's not that weird.
We can figure it out.
I love that to start with the Zach rant and then rant. Rant? The Zach rant. And then to end with it.
We used to have Zach rants all the time on Big Brother in the US.
That one's beyond me.
Yeah.
Sorry. I know Caitlin, but I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. All right. Well, thank you
for having me, Shannon.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for 10 years of RHAP. It's a joy to be a part of. I hope everyone thinks about becoming a patron. It really is just an amazing community and an amazing thing to be a part of. So thanks again, Rob. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to the listeners. And I will see you on the exit interviews coming up in another podcast shortly after this. Bye.
Australian Survivor. 21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shkeli.
Aldi. Million rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe
spoke.
The tribe spoke.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.